This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey, hey, hey.
It's Pat Albert.
It's Weekend Confirmed.
Awesome.
This is Garnet Lee bringing you the show this week, folks. It's summertime, and that means that, look, we are not going to resort to filler material. So if you're looking for a long show, this might not be your show. We're not going to be the short. I mean, we still got some things to talk about, but summer has arrived. And if you have not looked at your handy-dandy friendly release list schedule, there ain't a lot on it.
That time of year, ladies and gentlemen.
However, we have an awesome power trio here today. I have back, first time since E3, before E3, Mr. Jeff Mattis.
Hey, great to be here.
And sitting to his left, Nicole.
Hey.
So, guys, we have a lot to talk about. Oh, by the way, so last week we did the second round of post E3 console Appalooza.
I listened to that. That was a very good show, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, it was a really good discussion. A lot of good stuff.
I don't think we need to go back there again. What do you think? There was a lot of great discussion in the thread.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a good back and forth discussion over, you know, the potential for what Xbox's idyllic future might have been, and for how they've reversed course and where they're going now forward. Still have the $100 price difference. Still have the built-in Kinect.
Yep.
I still have the hardware discrepancies.
I do have a quick comment on Matrix nonsense,
okay.
Which is that he could basically, the way you get out in front of that stupid question. I mean, like, where's the $100 going?
Yeah,
we know where it's going. It's going into Kinect, right? I mean, ostensibly,
presumably,
that's where
the thousands of dollars of value.
Right. Yes, that too. So yeah, you spread all that out, and the problem with that is that they, you know. Kinect is still a thing of potential. It is not a, like, hey, we did Kinect 1 in the last generation, and we, you know, did some mini games and explored what it could do. But now that it's built into every box.
That's why it starts with a K, which is the variable in physics equations.
Exactly.
For potential energy. Shit, I figured it out.
Yeah. I'm sure somebody in marketing was like, that's why it's got a K on it.
Hey, you know where the money isn't going? It's not going in the new reason that we can jump on the Microsoft hate train, because there's no flimsy microphone in the box with the Xbox One.
Yeah.
So, and the reason behind that is because it comes with the Kinect. But that,
I'm just laughing about the fact that we're jumping on the hate train over it. Well, the number of people who are like, there's no head. Fuck it, I'm out of here.
Well, I mean, it's a multiplayer machine. Like, that's one of the big selling points of the 360 was that was the choice console for multiplayer.
But you see, you have your Kinect hooked up all the time.
Yeah, then you can hear everything in my house. You can hear my dogs barking at my front door, and like if
you
I
what's
sneeze,
interesting
and
is,
I can't mute it, I have to get up to mute the Kinect. Can you mute the Kinect?
Can you mute the cat? Is more the question. Can you mute the cat?
That's you kick the cat.
Does the cat? Well, they should have some cat specific Kinect commands, I think.
So interestingly enough. I was more negative about the... Well, not more negative. I was like more... I would have had all those questions. And then the other day, Ariel and I sat down to play, and she had hooked her Kinect back up to her 360.
Okay.
Why? God only knows. But that's a whole other subject.
It's curiosity.
And by default, it's enabled for chat if you don't have a headset hooked up, right? And so it went through its whole, like, you know, listening to the room and like setting the background noise and all that kind of stuff. And so when we fired up Borderlands, it was on. And you know what? That thing actually works surprisingly well as a... chat interface for playing a game.
Well, that's probably why they didn't put the headset in there.
But you do it. But you really would. I mean, one of the things, wouldn't you like? One of the great things about wearing a chat headset is you've got the mute button right on your cable.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. What are you going to say, Xbox mute in the middle of a match?
Actually, what you do is you take your right hand and you extend it out at a 90-degree angle, and you put up your right thumb and you twist it 45 degrees to the left.
Right.
And now you raise your arm up, and that's mute.
Yeah.
And then you put your arm back down, and then you're talking again.
Yeah.
So it's like a big toggle switch.
I'm sure that'll go over well.
It works great.
Yeah. You don't need both hands for the controller or anything. So
no.
That's going to go over really well.
We'll be using all voice commands in the future.
Sure,
anyway,
sure.
So.
We're not even going to have arms in the future.
Shoot, reload. That's it.
Anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny. But you know what is silly about that whole thing is then Microsoft, apparently the existing chat headsets don't work with the new...
So where do I get a headset? Can I use headsets? I mean, the new controllers have a headphone jack.
Information will be forthcoming at a future time. Okay. Maybe, since sides of flip-flop, you'll be able to use your Bluetooth headset.
I never bought one.
Well, folks, no backwards compatible headsets. There's another little tick mark on the negative
jump
list.
Jump on the hate train because the Xbox One doesn't come with a headset.
Just real quick to get back to my original point. I just think that their biggest screw up about that was that they have Kinect in there. They didn't explain in any tangible way how that's going to make games better. They're just like, and everybody knows what Kinect is right now.
Yeah.
So you need to have a AAA developer come out and go, look, here is our next big game that uses Kinect in some really awesome ways that you've never probably even thought about. And that's why Microsoft is so stoked to put it in the box. Right now, it kind of seems like they're, you know, sort of half hedging their bets on it again. They're like, well, it's in there.
They have the Harmonix game, the Fantasia game, and that is utilizing Kinect in some way. But I just don't think that's... I feel like that's more like an advancement of more of the same ways we're seeing Kinect being used. It's the same Just Dance model of movement.
Right.
And I feel like that's not what you mean.
Well, it's not exactly Just Dance. I mean,
it's just the movement thing.
But like it is a move. Well, that's the nature of a movement controller. Yeah, it's going to be a movement thing.
But I like the voice
better. If you're able to detect people's facial expressions and heartbeat and all this crap that they're saying that it can do, show me that. Like, show me a prototype of a game that is using that in a real way where I can get excited about it.
So Kinect Surgeon Simulator.
Yes.
Yeah, and if your heart rate goes too high, you...
Shit.
Hands start shaking.
That'd be cool, like in a game where like it can tell your heart rate, and like if you're like driving in Forza or something, if your heart rate's going up too much, like your hands in the game will shake. Or I mean, that's an awful idea, but wouldn't it be cool if
they
worked?
They could do drive the game.
I
have to keep your heart beating.
That's that's right, the Jason Statham thing. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're gonna.
What is it, the game where he needs adrenaline?
Yeah, or else his heart's gonna explode or whatever.
Yeah.
Or maybe he wants his heart to explode.
No, he's missing his heart. Remember, they cut out his heart. Remember, they cut out his heart.
Is that one or two? Like,
they stole his heart. I think it's Drive 2.
We've replaced Jason's heart with Folger's crystals. Let's see if he notices.
I sadly have to admit that I think I watched this movie with a bunch of one-up friends, like Cesar and Shauna, like drinking PBRs late at night one time. Anyway, it was probably the right way to do it.
Sure.
So, I do agree.
Cheap alcohol.
It all goes back to what we really, I think, hit on was the biggest piece of the stumble by Microsoft, which was poor communication, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And obviously, it's right up here in front when you, Jeff, who's a big gamer, is saying, like, look, you don't feel like they're 100% in on Kinect, but they're putting Kinect in the box. I mean, clearly, they are 100% in on Kinect.
Right.
But they still have not answered the question, which, you know, many could even trace back to Wii.
Why should I give a flying fuck about that as a hardcore gamer?
And you could trace it back to the Wii. Like, once you've done that first tier of motion games, what's next?
Well, sometimes nothing.
And
really.
Well, no one's answered the question very well, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, is no one has really very well answered that question. And Nintendo's answer, to a degree, has been, well, we don't really have an answer yet, but we're going to try this new thing with this tablet.
Right. Right, because they played out the motion control stuff and everybody's waiting for the lightsaber game and then the motion plus and all that stuff. And like,
they went down that road a good way.
Yeah, and it never got to the promise that they made, you know, at the very beginning. And, you have faith that they're eventually going to get there, but...
Do you still want that lightsaber game? Like, now that you know that motion control games involve you to move and, like, flail around your tiny living room, do you still want those games?
I think that if you add Kinect, right, there is stuff you could do with force powers and sorcery and things where you're doing gestures with your hands that could be cool
if done the right way. You can't hold the controller with both hands and be using your hands for Kinect. Like, there's got to be...
Well, you can if you take your hand off the controller.
Well, then
that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so I guess then the question is, how much do you buy into... We talked at good length about Rise. Did you see the Rise demos?
I did.
Okay, so you know one of the things in Rise that they like point out is that as you're the battlefield general, you take your hand off the controller and you point into the screen to where you want to send your troops to attack. Are you buying into that? Or what do you think of that?
Conceptually, I mean, I did not play the demo, so But yeah, when I saw you know, on from coverage and stuff, looked like a QTE fest to a certain degree. Like, it was basically you're perpetually moving forward.
That's optional finishers. The combat is fairly fluid.
Okay,
when you're actually playing it.
And it's all gesture based, or is that just for special commands?
That's like, just for commanding your troops that are with you. You're a combat, so you're playing a solo melee third person character,
right?
And you have control over them with the normal buttons controls for attack and slash and all that kind of stuff. And when you have executed a certain number of, when you committed enough damage to an enemy, then the opportunity to execute them with a finisher comes up, and then the QTE moments are finishers.
Gotcha.
And then actually they intend that you learn the pattern of those finishers such that by some point in time during the middle of the game, they actually turn off the button prompts and you're able to just do them by intuition because you've learned the way the game works.
I guess because I haven't had a chance to play it. I mean, and clearly that has an impact on impression because I think both Kristen and Jeff were both kind of lukewarm before they played it, and then they got a chance to try it. And, oh, this is pretty cool.
And I didn't like it that much.
No, you know, I don't know. I still think one of the coolest things for the core gamer that they've done with Kinect is the, you know, voiceover stuff in Mass Effect. You know, like
being wondered able if to, that was going
to
come up.
Being able to talk, say your lines or a little snippet of your line to get yourself into the character. I mean, if they get really, really crazy with it, they could do like an acting based. So like you have to be in character and you have to be angry or you have to. I don't know that would appeal to everyone, but like.
That sounds awesome to me.
But like you
have you read Ready Player One?
It's on my list.
I read it.
I should do that, though, because I've got some free time.
Like the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to like.
Well,
be
we need
in,
visors, obviously, and gloves.
We need visors and gloves, but you're right. That would be rather interesting to like be in character and
actually role play. Like I mean,
again. And if it can really read your facial expression, imagine how that could be applied. But do I really want that to be applied? Because sometimes I just want to sit on my couch and be a vegetable and play my game.
Well, that's when you
how
play
I always
else.
Want to play my games. But I like knowing that the Kinect that I have to pay for is capable.
Oh, it's capable
of doing these cool
great.
Things.
You know, like, if I needed it to do this, it could, you're basically like the LA rock star driving the Murcielago down Sunset at 15 miles an hour.
Yes. Yes.
Like I don't need every horror game that I play on Xbox One to like throw monsters at me or ramp up the tension based on my heart rate and fear. But having a game that did that very well would be a very cool experience. It's not something that
that's a really cool concept you just said right there.
Do every time. But like to actually have the game dynamically go, okay, they're really fucking scared now. Let's not throw like six dudes at them or whatever. Let's, you know, amp up the music and like bring down the lighting or whatever it is. Like you can actually have the game itself reacting to the player's physical state.
All right, you sold me. I'm sold on that idea. But I'm sold on
this
that
imaginary
idea.
Imaginary Kinect
of it reading my of it reading like my skin temperature and heart rate and saying, okay, right now he's at the height we want him at. Let's take it down for a minute.
Yeah,
and bring it back.
I mean, and like shit, I've never seen that actually working before. But if they claim that it works and they could get that to work, that'd be pretty exciting to me.
Even if it's farther down the line, if they say that now, that eventually we'll get there. I think that at least will help sales.
Yeah, I mean,
and I just don't think there's ever going to be a motion game that is going to be like the game for me where I'll be like, you know what, having to connect since Gen 1 was worth it. Like, I just don't care about motion games. So if they can really utilize the voice and the facial recognition, then I'm on board. It's not a huge deal to me. I'm going to buy it no matter what.
It clearly continues to be a challenge because if we go across to the Move, you know, now we have the color indicators on the front of the new controller. Nothing really said about Move controllers whatsoever.
True.
And arguably the coolest thing to have been done on Move wasn't a game that required the screen at all. It was Joust. You know, Sebastian Joust was like, that was probably the most fun thing that ever came out of the Move controller initiative.
I have to agree with you.
And what does that tell you about, like, there are a lot of really creative people who have tried coming at this thing from a number of different directions without a great amount of success.
Right. I think the only difference between last gen and this gen is that it's a ubiquitous thing now. Like, it's in every box, so you have a developer who's like, well, how much energy do we spend on this voice recognition for Mass Effect 3? Because, you know, whatever, 20% of the people that play Mass Effect 3 actually have one of these things.
You know, talk about last gen to this gen.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that I don't want in the next gen. Listen up, everybody. Here's something I don't want in the next gen. All right. I don't want texture map doors. Can we do away with texture map doors? Look, if there's not going to be a functioning door in the wall, just do me a favor. Don't put a texture map for a door there, because nothing breaks the verisimilitude of being in a game worse than walking up to a game door and it being just completely inoperative.
Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, a procedurally generated city with every building enterable, whether there or not there's anything in, I mean, that's a cool concept, right? And that's something that theoretically is more possible now that, you know.
I would rather have a ridiculous corridor of no doors than a corridor filled with doors that are nothing more than texture maps.
How about if they're texture maps, but in the texture there's like a cannot enter sign?
Yeah, that's lame. Okay. That's equally
lame. Well, get ready for GTA 5, because guess how many doors are going to be in that you can't open?
That goes to number two, which is, I think it's awesome if you build a multi-level structure. Mm-hmm. But don't build a multi-level structure only to fill stairwells and staircases with debris that I can't pass.
Yeah.
Because
what game are you talking about? That's also pointless. Yeah. I can't imagine what game you're talking about.
So that's not exclusive to The Last of Us.
That's every game.
It is a lot of The Last of Us. Every building.
Every game with stairs has that in it, I think.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. At some point in time, maybe one or two places you don't want to furnish all. I mean, I understand that there's a tremendous amount of resources that are required to do all these things.
Furniture's expensive. I get it. Everyone has an IKEA.
But the verisimilitude of like walking up to a door, especially if you're a dude with like a flamethrower and a shotgun and like all
this
stuff.
Or literally holding an axe.
Or literally holding an axe. Yes. And you cannot get through this crappy wooden door that, you know.
This door. Man, this door is really sturdy.
Another thing was in that particular game that I'm not mentioning.
Oh, by the way, we are going to do a spoiler cast for The Last of Us after the end of the show. So we will do the credits. We will do the whole thing. We'll like stop so you can miss it all, and then we'll ruin your life.
Yeah.
But like,
unless you've played it already, then it'll be cool.
Yeah. Then it'll be, your life's already probably kind of sad now because, you know, sad. But like when in a survival horror game where you're like, you're constantly searching for supplies. Oh, I need this ammo. Oh, I need these like these sharp objects. And then you go into a kitchen full of sharp knives and you can't grab any of them. Like, that drives me nuts, because those knives would be perfect.
I agree. Sometimes set dressing is, you know,
just
makes
knives
you want to interact
specifically
with it.
If it's a survival horror game and you're putting knives in front of me that I can't touch, but I can pick up, like, scissors or nails or something else sharp, but I can't pick up knives, they have handles. They're ready for me to use.
They have handles. I don't need to wrap a wrapping around the end of this.
And a little string.
I don't need to craft a knife. It's a knife.
Yeah.
It's a peeve.
I'm with you on that one, too.
Okay, good.
I think that all of these things are hopefully pieces of the puzzle that big time. So this is one of those things, too. It only applies to big time games, right? Because it's only a game wherein you're developing this super furnished world that's like completely realized that all of a sudden the fact that I can't walk across and pick up that knife off of the butcher block becomes an issue, because you're looking at it and you're like, I would just grab that knife right there, and then that would be awesome.
Right.
But you can't.
It's the thing that's funny to me is how many of these things have made it into, like, how crazily spread out they are through all these different games. They all use these same little things, and I think at this point, you know, we're, a lot of us are just kind of accept them. We don't, like, I don't spend a whole lot of time going, oh, they blocked the stairwell, oh, that's cheap, or whatever. I'm just like, oh, there's another blocked stairwell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think of it as cheap. I just sort of think of it as, like, that's ridiculous. Who would have spent the time to stack two couches, a desk, and a couple of chairs in such a fashion that there would be no way to get up into the stairwell above them? I mean, below, like, what did they do? Did they, like, crawl up into the top of the house and then throw all that shit down there and be like, well, that's it. We're just going to be here till the food runs out.
And then did they, like, share that plan with everyone else in the neighborhood? Like, hey, we have this new dresser idea where you put all your couches in the stairwell. Tell your neighbors.
There's like some guy creeping around the game world just creating fire hazards everywhere. He's like, all right, let's
He's also the guy who strategically positioned hay bales underneath every dead drop in Assassin's Creed.
Pigeons that are like pooping above every place that you should start jumping.
Yeah, it's an important job. Someone in the metaverse had to go do that and be like, oh God, I gotta move that haystack again. Nicole's getting ready to jump off the tower. So this is a good spot. Have fun storming the castle. Sorry, it just popped into my head.
Why?
Great movie.
I don't know. It just popped into my head.
No, I accept it.
Since we're like sidetracking, I had another thing. It seems like we're sort of in this world. One of the comments that came up last week, and this was voiced and supported by a number of people, is Adam Atari told Jeff and I to stop playing games on normal, especially survival or stealth games. And it got me thinking a lot about the way difficulties are crafted in games. Mm-hmm. Now, this argument goes on to talk about how Western game developers in particular have significantly altered the parameters of normal in games to make that very, as they're called, noob-friendly. Right. That's what Anna Tari said. They're designed to be noob-friendly. And that by virtue of doing so, have wrecked their own experiences. Now, I'm skeptical of it being quite as extreme as it's being described here. So the way many core gamers now perceive it is that normal has been toned down and messed up to such a degree that the quote unquote normal version of the game is no longer even the good version of the game. To the extent someone even said that we don't even trust your opinion. If you're playing on normal, we no longer trust your opinion.
That's absurd. That's crazy. Normal's fine. Lots of people play on normal, and there's easy because a lot of people don't like the same part of the game you do. Maybe you like that challenge of thinking you're going to die. Maybe someone else likes the narrative aspect. I think it's just mean to say that because you don't play in the same difficult as me, you're not as good as me, I'm not going to trust your opinion. That's negative Nancy right there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's negative Nancy.
I'd suspect that they make the game that they want to make, and then they, you know, they play test and they focus.
Of course they do.
Well, yeah, but I mean, well, obviously, I mean, that wasn't, but I mean, that's how they come up with these difficulty settings. They're like, well, you know, this person that calls themselves an average gamer is really, really struggling at this. How do we make it easier or whatever? And you're right. I think the bar has been lowered, but that's only because the audience has grown. And I think the problem with that is developers, there is no consistency, right? Hard in one game could be, you know, normal in another game or whatever. Depends on what the game is.
But then there's always still veteran or insane or...
Right. But I mean, like I would argue The Last of Us is a game best experienced on hard difficulty or above.
And many people... So that's where this obviously was the genesis of this argument.
Right. But the game does not do a great job of communicating to you why that is. Like, if you're just starting the game up for the first time, you don't know really the difference between. You're like, well, there's going to be more enemies. Is it going to be, you know, resource dependent? I mean, then that's really what Last of Us is.
I don't think we really know right now what the difference between those difficulty levels is anyway. Because in most cases, you get bitten, you are dead.
Yeah.
Right. It's the amount of health. Because I played on normal and then I played with my brother like back and forth and he was on hard.
Okay.
So like it's the amount of bullets the enemies can take and it's like how fast you lose your health. It's just the basic things.
And availability of resources.
Gonna kill you.
Well, one of the big things that people pointed out is availability of resources. That on normal, from anecdotally hearing about how people are playing on normal, that there are far too many resources available for you, degrades your experience.
I would venture to say that on normal, you probably didn't ever run into that situation where you're like, well, do I make a health kit or a Molotov cocktail?
Yeah. No, I played on normal and I had plenty
of
supplies.
What do I mean, because I know I'm about to enter this thing. I've got a really low health bar, but I know that there's like three or four clickers in this next room. So what do I do? Do I use my last resources to make one of these two things?
But I think that's when Last of Us was being demoed last E3, they kept talking about choice and how you could play the game how you wanted. You could approach the game you wanted. You could do stealth. You could do action. And I feel like if you don't enjoy that panic that you have when you play on hard, then what's wrong with playing normal? Because you enjoy the other aspects of the game.
I think the people that enjoy playing it on harder difficulties would argue, and probably a little wrongly so, that it overly dilutes the experience that the developer was trying to give you. But I would argue they're games. I mean, if you're having fun with it.
So here's where I started to think about the like fundamental question here. So I absolutely respect the opinion of Anna Tari, Cruel Legacy, and Shadow 13th here, because what they're getting at is they want to know when they play the game that they really got the experience that the developer intended.
That's why Halo games handled it really well.
I turn this around and say, hey, developer, if as part of your balancing, you're fundamentally changing what that play experience is for the player, then consider how you might otherwise change that equation. Because if The Last of Us, which we're in, this is not going to be spoilery because we're saving that later, but one of the core concepts here is forcing the player to make choices, and by virtue of your balancing system, you never force them to make choices,
right?
Then you've undermined your own game and you are no longer giving them the normal experience. You're not giving them any experience. Like, easy, normal, and hard should still involve having those moments of, I still need to make those choices, if indeed that is a core concept of what makes the game tick.
Totally agree with you. I think where it sort of diverges is that your average gamer, like you and I, or you and I, anybody at this table, we sit down to play a game and there's a history of mechanical know-how and like, you know,
very much so.
You're picking up all this stuff. You've played the third person shooters left and right. So you know basically what to do. Whereas somebody who, you know, maybe plays a few games or just plays Call of Duty or Madden or whatever, and they're like, oh, let me try this out. And they get in there and it's just whacking them in the face with a brick like every 2 seconds. Like, right. You're not good enough for this. They're going to be like, well, fuck this game. Like I don't know how to play this
Absolutely.
Shit. Like you know, whatever. It's not fun getting...
When you've got a game like Last of Us that's huge experience from the people who brought you Uncharted, right. It's going to be marketed really strong. You're going to get a number of people playing the game who are not experienced gamers. But then that's going to come back to the argument of, well, Jeff, I can see him sitting around. Well, you know what we really need to do is we need to make normal playable to where the average person who's going to be in this bigger group comes in and plays it, which results in it being watered down for everybody. I'm saying that I'm not disagreeing with these guys who are saying, hey, you should play it on harder difficulty. Mm. I am saying, though, that really I would hope that developers would take a very keen eye to balancing out this equation where they say, well, here's what I want the game to be about, and here's how I want the difficulties and the playthrough to flow for players, and not sacrificing what I want the game to be about just in the sake of making it easier for someone to play the game. Because if it's easier but they're losing the experience, then it's no longer a value.
Right. I mean, well, The Last of Us specifically, because it is so pretty much solely resource management based, right? The difficulty stuff. So you bump up to a higher difficulty and it's like pretty much just you have less stuff to work with, right? I don't have as big of a problem with that as I just wish they would have illustrated that at the beginning when I start to play. They're like, look, here's the experience as we intended. This is like, if you are a gamer, you know, and play a lot of games, you should play this setting. And yeah. I think like Halo does that, right? They're like heroic. Yep. This is the way that the game is intended to be played. And that way, if you play it as a new player and you're like, whoa, well, this is only the second highest from the top difficulty or whatever it is, you don't feel bad about bumping it down a little
You're
bit.
You're right. I think Bungie does do a really good job of communicating that.
Is that the one where you play the first part, like the first 15 minutes of the game, and there's no difficulty setting? It just kind of reads how you play and then suggests a difficulty level for you?
Well, no, I think that...
One of the Gears did that for you.
I think that's a good idea, too,
that
actually.
That is a good idea, awesome. And then finally, something that Shadow 13th brought up, and I think this is sort of voicing where the difficulty curve... Where the difficulty conversation goes on the other end, which he says, perhaps people in the games media field don't have the time to slog through on harder levels when there's so many other titles demanding their attention. Well, I would say that, first of all, I didn't play Last of Us for a review. I played it on my own time. Mm-hmm. But I think your word choice here of slog is a very important indicator about a reflection of how this is perceived. I don't want to slog through my games. Like,
no.
Slogging is not fun.
It makes me
not
think
an
of
attractive
swamps.
Word. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
And if you're trying to convey the idea of, you know, sitting down and spending good quality time with a game, I love that. You know, there's nothing better than, you know, being at a game until 3 or 4 in the morning and realizing what a great time you're having.
But that's not slogging.
That's not slogging.
Right.
Right. That's not slogging.
It's enjoying.
So.
Well, and it's ironic because The Last of Us could very well have been a game that was about slogging because it is so much like, okay, now you're in a puzzle room. Like, how do you sneak through or kill everybody? But that the weird thing about it is, and I think why it's so good, is it still manages to... Like when I'm playing Dead Space or something like that, sometimes you just like, I'm playing it for review. I have to really go, okay, look, you're going into Monster Town now. Just psych yourself up and stop being a pussy and just do it. Whereas Last of Us, I was actually while I wasn't playing it, I was like, man, that shit's tension filled, but I cannot wait to get back in there and see like what the next thing is. Like, I can't wait to see how the story evolves and like what happens to these characters. And
but if that's true, then how come difficulty matters so much?
Well, because
if you really care about the story, how come you're getting less of the game if you play on normal?
Well, you're not getting less of the game. I think the developers just have to communicate what each difficulty setting means.
Did you guys play on normal?
I did.
I started, and then
I didn't feel like there was any point where I'm like, oh, I have too many supplies. Like, I still felt a challenge.
I was a fucking tank by the end of that game.
Well,
I had like full everything, like.
Why don't we table that and we'll talk about that in the spoiler cast after
Perfect
the end.
Idea.
Because certainly supply management and difficulties be part of that.
I just don't want people to feel bad for choosing normal.
I don't think you should feel bad about choosing normal either. I guess my concern coming out of this is that I do get where the argument comes from, because there have been games where it does feel like normal even has become a watered down experience. And I hate to see the game industry go that way, because I want someone who picks up Last of Us, even if they are not not the gamer that Jeff described, who understands the conventions of how stealth works and how the sneaking right. and all those sort of pieces work, even if they're not that person, still gets all of the other parts, and that the tuning is clever enough to understand how to make it to where they can play it, but still face the same dilemmas.
Well, and what Nicole was saying, normal may be the good difficulty for you, because if you found that you weren't like totally overloaded with stuff by the end of the game, like then that's probably good. That means you're using it at the right clip, and you're like, you know,
for my skill level and patience level, normal was good for me.
Again, you know, and if you want to shoot a little bit more and do a little bit more actiony stuff and not worry as much about getting spotted or whatever.
Well, that's a whole other debate. That also brings in a whole other debate. All right, right. Don't go anywhere. We will come back. When we do, we will talk about
video games.
Assault on Dragon's Keep.
All right.
Bunkers and badasses!
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed. And sign up today.
All right, we are back and ready to dive in some Borderlands 2 DLC. Okay, I'm super happy for Assault on Dragon's Keep. I'll just say right now, like, it definitely, for me, has already lived up to my expectations. I love Tina. I love Tina's sensibility. I love the way that they make her, like, this crazy interjection of fun into the game. And it brought back all the fun that died over the first three DLC packs.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Assault on Dragon's Keep isn't canon, I guess. It's can I explain what it is?
Yes.
Okay, so the intro.
I can't wait to hear.
The intro is, I mean, I'll just do the very beginning, but like you're playing as the Borderlands 1 characters, Sans, one of them. Spoiler. And Tiny Tina is guiding you through, what is it, Boulders and
Skaggins.
Badasses.
Boulders and Badasses. And it's basically Dungeons and Dragons.
Bunkers and Badasses.
But whatever, the point is.
it's basically D&D, and Brick plays the siren, who he calls Brick.
And very, very attractive. Aww. Very attractive, I do say so. But so the game, the DLC is set up as you are in this, just this kind of like adjacent land that's not actually part of the Borderlands 2 universe, and you are experiencing things as Tiny Tina is just making them up. Just like straight up, like you get off a boat and she's like, and then there were skeletons, and then skeletons appear, and then there was a boss battle, and then someone has to be like, there can't be a boss battle, no one will win. So it's...
It was Lilith.
It was Lilith, yeah. I didn't know.
So she's a pretty bad DM then.
She's an awesome DM. She is the best DM of like pulling shit out of her ass with no idea what's going to happen next.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's what I meant.
So yes and no.
Yeah. Right. Like she's not a great, like serious dungeon master. She's just kind of, like you said, pulling it out of her butt.
Yeah.
So the beauty of this thing is that they take your characters from Borderlands 2, which are at this point, you know, armed up with crazy weapons that are already like doing all sorts of, you know, right, awesome effects damage, and you're feeling relatively well kitted out. And instead of facing the same groups of enemies you've been facing ad nauseum in the same sort of, you know, Hyperion world that you've been playing in, suddenly you are in a D&D game with, you know,
that's
like,
pretty awesome, actually.
With like an old town and skeletons and rock golems and
trees,
and
Trents.
Yeah, and Treants.
So this is a you guys recommend this.
I highly recommend
it. Okay. It's only 800 Microsoft points, so $9.99. Like, it's not an expensive expansion.
And how much content you get? Like,
so they've already said it's about 2 times the size of the other ones.
Oh, that's good.
Including the first one, which was the piratey one, which I forget what it was, Crimson, which Scarlet. Was the best. Scarlet, yeah, which yeah. was the best of the three, by the way. And it was at good tier.
Right.
It was a good tier, definitely.
Was that done by the original team?
No, so none of these. So we're going to talk about that. That's actually, I want to go on like the springboard. This is the springboard for the conversation about these DLC packs. Right. Because this is the first time that Gearbox has come back and done DLC for it. And it's really evident in the care and effort that's gone into this. This is a huge, like, it's not just a D&D skin. Like, they went whole hog for this. There are touches that are pulled straight out of any sort of dungeon romp, like Diablo, like game you played. For instance, they added like different power shrines. So we're playing, like, so they have a shrine that you come up to and you can spend a couple bucks on iridium right before you get into a conflict, and it powers you up for more power. So it's exactly like coming up to a shrine in Diablo,
sure,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
It has like, so they haven't just added a layer of paint to it. They've actually gone and thought like, yeah, so it's, what would it be like if they were playing a D&D game?
See, I'm sold. That's really cool. That sounds right up my alley.
It's really silly, and it's whimsical, and it has kind of a lot of the Lord of the Rings elements that you're I'm sure looking for.
Yeah,
of course.
But I really enjoyed it. There was one like badass achievement where you had to smash pumpkins, and it's called Smashing Pumpkins.
Yep.
And when I discovered it by like just, oh, there's a pumpkin, I'm gonna punch it, and then I started, like, the little ticker comes up and I'm like, oh man,
Smashing Pumpkins.
And then you're like, why is the drummer on heroin?
Anyway. So throughout this, you know, the thing that's stand out to me about this DLC pack from, you know, the first few hours of playing it is that it's not just, it's obviously a very collaborative effort that goes into making this. It's a combination of someone, you know, writing the script and someone with the creative sparks and ideas for it, and then someone with the creative art talent to really pull it off. And you can see all the pieces coming together here and clicking. And to that degree, this is one of those things that really works. And that makes it really fun.
Do you know if it's a bigger team or just the original team? Just like the guys that know how
to. We don't actually know. We don't know who the team is, but we do know that this came directly from Gearbox as opposed to the other three. So.
That's damn cool. I mean, that's one way to extend your game life for sure. I mean,
and they've gone, you know, there are other clever things that they do. For instance, there's another enemy that you face in this. Now there's a skeleton who's possessed with a magical sword, and after
Skellymans.
Yeah. And the thing is that, like, you can't just kill them. When you kill them, they collapse, but the sword will bring them back to life if you don't run over to the enemy and pull the sword out of them, thus extinguishing their life force.
Oh, that's clever.
So it's like they've added more than just, you know, more than just reskinned things. Right. They really thought it out. And I think that's the difference between having this team in there with the creative energy versus the first three. The first three, Scarlet was fun. Scarlet was clever. It added a new world, an area that was fun to play with. Pirates, okay, you know, you can pretty much cash that, you know, take that to the cash box,
right,
and
sure,
be like, okay, that's going to be good at a base level, right? But what happened was that as they moved on into Torque, and especially into Sir Hammerlock's big hunt, it just lost all momentum. It's like you got this sense, unlike, so if you play Borderlands 2,
right,
as you move through Borderlands 2, you're constantly encountering new areas, new people, there's fun,
sure,
stuff happening.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening in these DLC packs. You went to Scarlet's and you had like the pirate adventure. That was cool. But then you went to Torque's, and it felt as if, well, all that was done here was a bunch of new enemies and a couple of areas were created to populate so that I could run through them and shoot them and pick up more stuff.
Right,
and like, they were linear. Yeah. It wasn't about exploration, whereas, you know, in the main game, it was like you could just kind of just go anywhere and find stuff. With the DLC, I felt it was very much, go here, now go directly here, now kill six of these, and you're done.
Oh, exploration is like, you know,
it's big.
50% of the sauce of that game. It's like, what can I see new? What's the next thing?
What chest can I open?
Right, and though the game is about getting those next weapons and kitting yourself out, it has to come with some sense of accomplishment along the way. If it's just like, if it's just running into what devolves in your imagination into a box with some things inside that you shoot and pull the loot out of like a piñata,
right,
then it's no longer fun. It's no longer as much fun, right? And this really got bad. You know, Sir Hammerlock's big game hunt is not good. It's just straight out not good. The game hunts, which could have been interesting in a Monster Hunter sort of way, are not put together well. The quests are not fun. They're very punitive. They oftentimes have set requirements that if you don't fulfill them, then require a significant amount of backtracking. So that's not a lot of fun. No. Like the game, maybe it learned too much from Monster Hunter, because Monster Hunter does require that you do those sort of things and get them just right. But
that's what that game is.
But that's what that game is. Yeah. And they could have pulled the fun part out of that and had these big notorious things to go hunt and had it be more fun. But even the notorious things that you go to hunt, they're not that creative. They're not that clever. They're not, like, it just doesn't have any of those fun sensibilities, which is a big slap in the face when you get this and suddenly realize, oh, these guys still have all this creative juice in the tank.
No, that's, so, I mean, that's great that they can't. I mean, honestly, like, this was completely off my radar until you guys started talking about it, because I was just assuming that, you know, people were like, oh, the other DLC is okay, you know, and I'm still not, like, I'm playing through Borderlands 2 with my dad still, so, like, we're okay.
Well, it also depends on the degree of your Borderlands 2 junkiedom. I mean, keep in mind, Ariel and I are big-time Borderlands 2 junkies.
No, we've never really, I mean, we play a couple hours at a time, maybe.
So, we finished one run-through, and we're, like, right at the end of our second run-through. We were going to do Ultimate Vault Hunter, but then after I heard some about how difficult the enemies become in Ultimate Vault Hunter, we kind of decided, man, maybe we want to do that. But we're both at level 50 heading to 51.
So you are the Borderlands 2 connoisseur?
I don't know about connoisseur, because the connoisseur is my friend Dan Jevons, who hopped into our game last night as a level 61, which is full maxed out, and comes running up to us in the middle of the battle. Like so it's cool because the game changes complexion and it really shows that Diablo-like underpinning of it. He jumps into our game, like joins us in this big battle that we're having, is pretty powerful. So he like helps us wipe them all out, runs up to me, like throws a gold sniper rifle down and says, here you go, bro. I had this. It's like the only thing I have left because I've just been farming level 61 shit. I'm like, like, dude,
Pretty awesome though.
But that's it. I mean, yeah. and that is, and it has that same momentum then for players who are really into it. And so this seems like the perfect game to maintain itself with more content, yet it really struggled through that. And it's led me to really question the value in general. Like, where are we going with single player DLC? The promise of it, you know, a few years ago seemed so great. Yes, I get it. I mean, I think we all understood that publishers and developers were interested in doing season passes because it's an extra revenue stream and to help thwart trade-ins and, you know, loss of interest in the game, right? They figure, if I get you hooked in my world, I can do more content into this world, and you will enjoy it, and you will pay me for it, and you will keep the game, and this will be awesome. Right. And the gamer thought, well, this is cool, because I love this game. And if you're going to keep working on this game because I bought the game, I would love to buy more, because I want to buy more of it, right? And yet it has not come to fruition.
I think the online pass was kind of a turning point in that. Yes, you're totally right. That's why they've been relying on DLC so much, because they wanted to prevent used games and convince you to hold on to your game longer. But as soon as they made you pay a little extra to have that online pass, I feel like the enthusiasm behind that kind of went away.
For the developer?
For EA. For consumers. Consumers are like, not just a DLC season pass. I need to buy an online pass. I need to buy all these things. And I feel like they put so many measures at you to keep you from selling your game that it got to the point where I'm not excited about DLC as much. Does that make sense?
I see what you're saying from a consumer standpoint. I'm just still talking about it from the enthusiasm side. So I'm thinking about it like, okay, so the typical model has been, we'll give you four $10 packs for $30 if you buy it up front, right? So we're going to nail down that $30 purchase from you, and ordinarily these would be $9.99. We're going to give you 25% off, and that's $40. So if the retail price of this content that's being produced is $40, and the R&D for the game engine and everything is already in place, so essentially at this point in time, the developer, their responsibility comes down to cranking out content. So doing the fun part, having the creative ideas, doing the artwork, and I'm not belittling this. I'm still saying there's a tremendous amount of work there. But in the spectrum of things, if you're building a game from the ground up, you've got all the pre-production, all of the conceptual work, all of the engine, all of the tool set optimization, all those pieces that have to get in place before you can start building things.
Sure.
And then once you start building things, now you're in gear, right? You're building things. You're building the content of the game. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say that for $40, I sort of have in my mind that the content that I would get would be roughly close to on par with the content that I had in the game.
Right.
Lengthwise, quality-wise,
yeah.
experience-wise.
That's never the case, though.
And yeah. that's not the
that's
case.
That's reasonable, yeah. but...
Now, some games handle it better than others, right? Like I think Mass Effect's, you know, regardless of how you feel about each individual episode, the way that they said, okay, look, here's another chunk of the story. The way that I treat those is, like, I download
them. Mass Effect
3? On any Mass Effect. Like, you...
Because 3, the DLC packs weren't, like, even... I mean, like, you had, like, the Leviathan pack, which was, like, 3 hours long versus...
Well, the gold standard, right. to my
yeah,
mind...
that's true.
To my mind, the gold standard were Lost and Damned and Ballad of Gay Tony.
Oh, by far.
Both of which took the initial game's promise as far as narrative and storytelling and went up a level mm-hmm. and actually achieved for many people what they had hoped Grand Theft Auto 4 would. It was almost a rebirth of, oh, yeah, this is what Grand Theft Auto 4 could be and is and should be.
Right, or do a Blood Dragon, right? Do a...
Well, that's a whole other kettle. That is a whole other kettle of fish.
Right, but, yeah, I mean, a cheaper game or a DLC yep. that's totally...
Well, then there's expansion versus downloadable content.
Yes.
Right.
Which DLC could just be like a
how are
map.
How are you defining? Oh, so you're saying DLC would be a smaller thing?
Well, yeah.
Gun packs
to me is like Ballad of Gay Tony.
Gun packs and horse armor and new character skins can kind of all get fucked. Yeah, in my opinion.
So I wasn't like, really bringing that. I mean, to me, the heart of this conversation is about single player extension of big games that I'm building a game. And I'm building a game that I've done it's going to be a big world, has some great characters in it. And I'm thinking to myself, players are going to love this world. I'd love to give them more content in the world. And that was where I hoped this was going to go. I mean, that was the promise. And then we saw things like what Grand Theft Auto did. And we're like, this is where we should go in the future. They've made this big game. They've put all this investment into building the engine and the pipelines. And now they have it. And they come back and they keep giving us this great content. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't really materialized with other games. And I think maybe the season pass is the culprit. But maybe the season pass is the culprit because once they had our money, then they
didn't try as hard.
Well, and we know, I mean...
Like, or they did a different way. Like, why is it that Borderlands 2, the follow-on to Borderlands 1, which was a multi-award winner, which was super successful, which had great add-on packs.
Right.
Now, granted, they didn't do all their own add-on packs there. I think they farmed out one or two of those, but they didn't farm all of them out. They did more of them themselves. Mm. Why is it that we get to Borderlands 2, and it's not until the fourth and final, allegedly, add-on pack that Gearbox finally can be bothered to do some of this for us, to do some more content in this world they loved, that their fans have loved, that everyone is begging for more?
Well, that's a question for the studio, because if you look at somebody...
Or the publisher.
But you look at somebody like CD Projekt Red, right? And their DLC stance, which is, we make DLC for people that bought the game, and it's free. Like, have fun with that shit. You know, like, and I mean, I'm sure they're not making every last dollar, wringing every last dollar they want to out of the series, but they realize that buys... You know, depending on what your development, I mean, like you said, they built the tools, they have the world. It's right. just a, you know, creating content for it.
Now,
how much goodwill
played,
does that buy?
I haven't played their DLC. Is it as expansive as these add-on campaigns can be?
Well, let me ask you this. If it's free,
does it
really matter? I mean, if it gives you another couple of quests or whatever.
No. But my point is that as a player, I'm on board with the idea of because look, I get that the cost of developing a AAA game is very high. I'm every bit on board with paying for additional content to be built into that game post-release.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want it to come out, you know, I don't want something significant to come out 2 weeks later and feel like, oh man, why was this not in my game? I mean, come on.
Right, right.
Because then I mean, mentally, I can understand.
yeah, exactly.
yeah.
So rest in peace, by the way.
Mentally, oh, I can understand that, like, there were, you know, parameters to what was being developed under the initial budget, and then there are things that come after that. I can get that reasonably. I can reason that out. But as a player and as a consumer, I just doesn't feel good. You know,
No. It doesn't.
Well, I don't
it doesn't, because there's no industry standard for, like, you know, when you pay $20, you expect a certain quality level or a certain amount of content, and it's totally different depending on what game you're playing, what the DLC is, there is no, like, you know, I spent $10 or whatever, I know I'm going to get another 5 hours of content.
Think about like a Skyrim. Like, doesn't it feel like a whiff that Skyrim had Dawnguard, which was okay? I mean, the zombie thing was fairly
vampires.
It was vampire. I'm sorry, I said zombie. Has zombies on the brain.
Serena's vampire like thing. My best friend, so okay. It was cool.
So that was kind of cool. Not the biggest, you know, richest thing, but obviously pretty well done.
Yeah, neat.
Hearthfire. Yeah. Which
an insult, basically,
remains unpatched.
We don't value you, but we value your
money.
With
problems of people who can't even get into the building. Like, it's like, come on. Like, that's a total disaster.
That being said, I do love my two adopted daughters. Let's not, you know, bring them into this.
Well, Skyrim's kind of a beast of its own because it is, you know, there's the mod tools. Well, I guess on console it's not.
On console, it's the, this is, it, could there be a more fertile ground, having spent so much labor of love to build that world, to give, to, and it being so well tailored to building new content into, to how do we have Hearthfire?
Well, and it's one of those games where you don't have to worry about the single player story. Like in some games, when you want to make single player DLC, you have to worry about how the game ended, or if what if someone who hasn't beaten the game wants to play this DLC, and so you have those constraints. With Skyrim, you don't have any of that.
You could build tremendous, giant new stories into it. It hasn't. Now, I do think that they've redeemed themselves to a degree with Dragonborn.
Dragonborn was awesome. You can ride dragons.
Always awesome.
That alone.
You get a new house, and in your new house, you have lots of those mannequins, so you can display all your cool armor, which is really important to me.
So I just don't.
Excellent.
I'm really curious where, though, this leaves us. I feel like for many gamers now, we feel burned by season passes.
Oh yeah,
we feel like
I don't trust them. Isn't that dumb? Isn't that stupid? That
no,
like,
I don't.
It's
think
a game
it's
that
it's
I
been...
like, and I'm in Borderlands. I'm probably gonna buy all the DLC, and I'm gonna pay more in the long run. But I don't feel comfortable paying that $40 up front.
Well, and how often do they say these are the five pieces that are coming out?
Never.
Never. They're like, here's the first one. Well, we got four on the way. And well, they could tell you though. They could be like, "Well, this is an armor and weapons pack with one new enemy, and this one is an actual full-on episode."
And with like Borderlands, didn't the Necromancer not come in the season pass, or wasn't at least one of the DLC
the Necromancer
they released?
Didn't come with the
yeah.
season pass.
So you buy the season pass, and then before they finish release that all that material that you paid for, they release things that you have to buy.
Yeah. Well, the season pass. To be fair, the season pass's concept was here are new content pieces, here's new narrative pieces for which you can buy in advance. And so I get they created another character and you know that's a whole other question. I mean, I think it's really annoying that you can't zap your characters up to level, because I would probably go buy the Necromancer if I could get her and then have her at level 50 where I am now and not have to play through the game a bunch of times with her, because I don't want to go back and play
that. Wow, let you do that. You can do that in WoW,
right? So I think that the opportunity to a degree has been lost, and to get it back now will be more difficult than it would have been originally. Like now they really have, now if a studio really wants to go down this path, they really have to prove themselves. And I think that's a shame, because I think it was a great opportunity to help balance out this. We talked a lot about this value equation because of the whole Microsoft One situation with DRM and publishers worried about how they're making money. I think that the failure of the season passes to deliver on really great content really undermines what could have been a great system to help establish a new way for game and game developers and publishers to be successful in this marketplace.
And doubling the price of their game.
Yeah, and effectively doubling the value of the game. And then, you know, hopefully if it's built right, really building a great world that even becomes even more valuable and important to the player. You know, like let's say Skyrim had two or three great campaigns. Like, it doesn't need more fans, but it would have really kept them in there. And it could have been a great, I mean, how awesome of a bridge to the Elder Scrolls Online would that have been? Not that it needed more help, but everything helps. Every little piece comes together to make your world more attractive and more appealing and keeping players in it.
I agree.
It just seems like a huge failure, and I don't know where they go. I don't know how they fix it. I think, to your point, Nicole, you said you felt burned. You might not buy all the Borderlands. I wouldn't have bought all this Borderlands 2 content. At least I wouldn't have been happy about it. I would just as gladly have bought Captain Scarlet and this one. And I don't even know. Maybe Torque, maybe not Torque.
I think the season pass thing, I don't mind a la carting the occasional piece of DLC. But from what I've seen, most of the outlets that have done season passes have basically been like, okay, well, yeah, there's one or two things in there that are pretty cool. But like, I didn't even know what half of this was when I bought it. And like, now that I do know, I'm like, well, it's like 6 months later and I'm not super sure. Like if a company came out and said, look, here's like three pieces of a la carte DLC post-release and it was all awesome, next time around, they can season pass me. You know, like I'll be like, oh, okay, you're doing the same. It's a sequel or whatever. You're using the same model. But like I haven't found one that is like fully Like, oh, I loved every piece of DLC you gave me.
I would have bought the season pass. But what about BioShock Infinite? Did they offer a season pass? And how? And then, I mean, we have no idea right now. But well, how the hell are they going to have DLC?
There's still the single player DLC for BioShock Infinite floating out there somewhere.
If they're making it,
they're making it. Yeah, they're making it. They've confirmed they're making it.
What could it possibly be?
I have a theory, but it'll be a total spoilery.
I think it's going to.
Wait,
are you going to spoil? Are you going to spoil shit now?
Yeah, I'm going to spoil something. So give me like 10 seconds. I think the DLC is going to be about how Elizabeth and Anna Comstock are the same person.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I've kind of worked it out in my head and like how all that would work. But anyway, spoiler over.
It's a good theory.
Yeah.
But like to your point, it's like how you feel that single player DLC misses the boat and just doesn't deliver what it should. Is that even possible with Infinite?
Like
to me, it was like a done story. Like here's a story. Oh, now it's over. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Infinite really was difficult. Unless you wanted to go back and do prequel material or do, you know, tell some of the stories that exist within the Vox Populi conflict. And, you know, maybe there's some other interesting angles to explore there. I think it becomes really challenging. But the big thing is that now I really feel like season passes, having bought the one for Borderlands 2, I'm like, I don't know if I do that again for now. I really want to see. I think that the sad thing is that instead of season passes becoming this awesome thing where it's like, wow, I not only do I have my game, now I'm going to support the developer and we're going to get awesome additional content. It's like now you sort of feel like you walked into the discount segment at Walmart and picked up this blast package that's got like two things in it you like and a couple of things that you shove in the closet and a few years later wind up giving to Goodwill.
Yeah.
But you get, you know, a tax write-off for it, so in the end it works out. Real quick, radical idea. Whenever I play a game like Left 4 Dead 2 with a bunch of people, there's always someone who doesn't have the right map pack, and it becomes this, like, waiting game.
Yes.
I would pay for a game that I played multiplayer all the time, I would pay for a season pass that would update my game in the background.
You know what I would pay for? I would pay for a game like Left 4 Dead 2 where I could have that map, and anyone who joined me could play it while I had it. But then when they went away, they couldn't play it.
See, that's
awesome.
Yeah. Critter, really good idea. And it eliminates that whole, okay, we lost half our team because we're in the map pack section.
Half of you don't want to pay for it. Half of you do. They're downloading it. And then you're all in the lobby for like 35 minutes.
Yep. All right, folks, stick around. We'll do one more segment before we break and do a little Last of Us spoiler cast. When we come back, we'll pick up on some Company of Heroes 2, some Raise the Dead, maybe some iOS stuff, and we'll catch up on what Nicole and Jeff have been playing over the past few weeks. Stick around. We'll be right back. That was actually not the 80s. It was the late 2000s there with a little cut copy. And we're back. And actually, a wild Andrew Yoon has joined us.
Andrew.
That's the call of the wild Andrew.
He will be, he's here because he wanted to get in on the Last of Us spoiler cast, which is coming up after this segment, in which we will pull together a whole bunch of things.
But before we do, I got in a little bit early and I was taking notes. I want to just chime in on the last segment. So, great DLC, Fallout 3. I don't know why you guys forgot about that.
That's true.
Also, new Luigi U, which just came out last week on Wii. I know it's on a system that no one plays.
So wait, would you? I guess that is DLC because you know they're repackaging it and selling it later. But you're right.
Yeah, that is an expansion. That's DLC, whatever you want to call it. But
I agree with you.
I think that's Nintendo doing it right.
I agree. No season pass for that, but I agree.
No, exactly. I think they're just like, we need to make something digital. Let's figure it out. And they came up with something really clever, I think. And in terms of good season pass single player content, I think Assassin's Creed 3 is a really good example as well, where they have a completely different, technically non-canonical story, but technically canonical.
Did they blend the multiplayer packs with the single player packs?
Yeah.
So that depends on, like, if you aren't a multiplayer player.
So if you weren't into multiplayer, you just buy it a la carte. But, you know, that was like a really, you know, cool, different way of approaching DLC and having an episodic story that, you know, took advantage of its format. So I think we're really just at the beginning of seeing really great single-player DLC content. But there are a lot of logistical issues. So, you know, you guys mentioned Bioshock Infinite. The fact that they haven't mentioned it at all. Like, they did announce that there was going to be a season pass. They haven't sold a season pass, to my knowledge. But there is a season pass coming. The main problem is they haven't figured out what the DLC is going to be.
Isn't Ken Levine writing the script for Logan's Run now, too?
Like, yes, he is.
He's probably pretty busy.
Little do you know that Logan's Run is actually part of the Bioshock Infinite universe.
That makes sense. It all adds up.
You know what, Andrew, if I didn't make this point clear, I actually completely agree with you about the idea that we should be, when you should instead of could, be at the beginning of great single-player DLC, because it makes so much sense. But I'm concerned that we've undermined it already by some of these mistakes and mismoves.
There's going to be a lot more open-world games, I think, this generation. Like, that's going to be one of the explored spaces, and that is a great place to experiment with DLC.
I think in the next generation, when fewer people have discs and their collections are digital,
mm-hmm.
we're going to see a lot more single-player DLC because, you know what, that audience is still going to be there. So let's say, you know, when they had that Robin DLC for Batman Arkham City, that came out like a year after the game had already come out. I'm sure most people had already traded that game in. But, you know, let's say...
Or put it on their shelf.
Batman Arkham Universe or whatever, the next one after Origins is, you know. That game, assuming you buy digitally on PlayStation or Xbox... You'll be like, oh, whatever. I'll just re-download the game and have the DLC with it. And so in the future, we're going to see publishers and developers make single-player content not to prevent people from trading their games in, but just because they want to. And
that's what I was hoping for. You're making my argument.
Yeah. But the approach was different. Last generation, they were like, well, we have to fix this used game problem. But that wasn't the solution to it, you know? That wasn't the right way of going.
Perhaps I'm too idealist, and I've been accused of being a romantic idealist many times.
All the time.
I genuinely thought that there was, like, real developer support as well idea of, like, we're going to make great creative content.
There was developer support, but I think, realistically, they didn't realize the cost of single-player DLC. They didn't realize the... still relatively low online penetration, the percentage of people that mm-hmm. use Xbox Live, you know, Marketplace.
So you still couldn't sell as much of it as you'd want.
Exactly.
To.
I mean, and, you know, something like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, which we think is a great example of DLC, and it's been a tremendous success for Ubisoft. That sold 500,000 copies. That's a lot. That's great.
And they said that was exceeded their expectations.
But think about how many copies of regular Far Cry 3 they sold at retail, right? So if you think about it, the percentage, if they sold 4 million copies of Far Cry 3 and only 500,000 copies of Blood Dragon, which doesn't even need Far Cry 3.
Right.
Like, so... That's still a really low percentage conversion. So that's this generation, and you can't really commit a lot of resources into single player DLC if people just aren't going to buy it.
Did Rockstar ever? And because I think when it was digital only, Ballad of Gay Tony and Lost in the Dam lost money, right? And
yeah, those two were actually considered failures
until they did the disc based release, right?
Even then, it came a bit too late. I mean, the main reason why those two are probably as good and as polished as they are is because they got the Microsoft money to really, you know, make sure that it didn't lose money at the very least. Because Microsoft paid out many, many millions of dollars in order to make those two expansions.
They funded the development of them, basically. They essentially funded the development of them to have exclusive content into the Xbox.
But the percentage of people that ended up playing those, still really low compared to, you know, the people that have played Grand Theft Auto 4.
And it does beg the question whether no matter how good your world is, how many people will actually come back for more? Like, how do you get a player to come back for a DLC pack as opposed to another full game? There's been a, like... on the Assassin's Creed 2 front. So you had Assassin's Creed 2, and then you had the other Assassin's Creed 2 games. If those had been Assassin's Creed 2, you know, downloadable episode add-ons, would they have done nearly as well as they did? Now, granted, they fleshed them out and made them into big games, but obviously there was a tremendous amount of content. But had they just followed a different path and told that story via add-on packs, would they have done as well?
No, you would have had
probably not.
Trail off, yeah. Serious,
you would have had trail off. Yeah. And instead, they were able, by making them full-scale boxed games, to, you know, maintain the, you know, the stature of, oh, this is another big, weighty entry in the Assassin's Creed story.
Well, I think one way to keep people coming back to DLC is timing. And I feel like if you release something in the summer, like Borderlands 2 did with, you know, Assault on Dragon's Keep, I have nothing else to play. If you release a DLC pack in November or December, like, I have a backlog of games to play. I don't necessarily want to go back to a game I've already completed. But when there's a lull like this, I think that's a great opportunity to release content.
Yeah. Well, it is a lull. There's not a whole lot that's come out, although PC strategy fans are probably very excited because Company of Heroes 2 came out this week.
It did.
Jeff's been playing it some. I just downloaded it yesterday and have played the first hour and a half or so of the campaign.
I'm not much further into it than you are. I've
been playing the beta.
Put it on here. Oh, okay. So you probably have a slightly more rounded impressions, but I just wanted to talk about my first blush of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that I thought when I started playing it was, would I even be able to play this if I hadn't played the first Company of Heroes?
No tutorial, no demo, no holding your hand?
Not so much. Not so much, really. I mean, I think there's a couple of little tool tips, but you're like, oh yeah, I remember I can do that in Company of Heroes. And I'm like, wait a second, did I learn to do this in this game? Like, it's been a couple of years since I picked that other one up.
I was astounded that a game that is going to get as much attention as Company of Heroes 2, which has such a gap between the last Company of Heroes title and this one, would decide, you know what, we really only think our audience is people who have played a lot of strategy games before and have played our strategy game before, and we're not really going to bother with getting you into the game.
Right.
But
right.
Then we're going to do weird, and it is weirdly like of two minds there, because it doesn't give you any sense of tutorial of how to do things that are important to commanding your troops in the game. But then it holds your hand and says, okay, Garnet, here, this is how you flank a tank gun.
Right.
I'm like, really? Like, you're going to tell me how to flank a tank gun, but you're not going to tell me how to command my troops and what functions they have and like how to use their specials?
You know who didn't have a tutorial during World War II? The Russians.
The Russians.
All right? All right? So it's just the most accurate simulation of experience that you could possibly have.
That's Stalingrad, ladies and gentlemen. That's how it happened. Yeah. You know,
I totally agree with you. It's bizarre. Like so you said that, and I flashed back to me sitting there yesterday afternoon, and the opening of the game starts off with your conscripts arriving on the docks.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, before even that, the menu screen for that is butt ugly.
The weird.
It's just cluttered with shit. It's like, you know, here's multiplayer, and here's build your troops, and here, it's like not a standard menu, and it looks really. Yeah.
I agree.
It looks like a sub-menu or something.
It's a bit busy.
Yeah.
It's a bit busy.
Yeah, a bit too much going on.
And so you load into the game, and it's like the window boxing from where, you know, it's video goes away.
Right.
But I'm just sort of waiting for them because, you know, I've been bred to know how my strategy game starts. Like, okay, they're going to show me how to select a unit, and then they're going to show me how to command it, and then they're going to show me how to use its ability, and then they're going to show me the next unit, and they're going to show me how to command it, and then I'm just sitting there. I'm like, okay, when's the game start? When's the game start? And finally it's like, command us off the dock, commander. And I'm like, well, okay, sure, I can start.
Get
playing.
Off the dock.
I guess I better start being in charge.
Enter.
Yeah.
And I know how to select them. I understand. I've played Company of Heroes before. I loved it. I'm no Sean Elliott at it, who was a master at it, but I know how to play the game. I'm good with it. I was just trying to, you know, be ready and accepting of the way it was going to start the game.
Well, and I'm like, okay, so what's new about this new Company of Heroes? And you're like, okay, I guess I'm figuring out the old stuff first. Like, oh yeah, right click and this and that and, you know.
So what would
it all
recommend?
Came back to me, but
what would you recommend to someone who hasn't played the first one, who does want to check out the second?
Play Company of Heroes. Play the first one.
Yeah.
The first game is great and does a fantastic job of laying out the foundations of all the things that are important in the game, such as keeping your troops in good cover, finding and utilizing that cover, and its entire concept of getting rid of resource management that you've done in real-time strategy games before in exchange for establishing command and control networks. Basically, it takes the map and turns it into a jigsaw puzzle, and each piece of the puzzle has a node that generates something you need to fuel your expansion. And so you have to go out and conquer territory and hold it, and it makes for a much more interesting tactical
game. Did you ever play a Dawn of War? That was also a relic deal. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing. You're controlling smaller squads, and it's a more tactical sort of, like, instead of a huge map where you've got a billion dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
And it looks really good. And the beginning of the campaign so far has been a little weird because I didn't expect it to become a tutorial, but then it does turn into a tutorial. And I'm like, right. But it turns into a tutorial over the stuff not the stuff that pertains to the game of how do I play your game, but the stuff that pertains to how do I be a good army tactician. And right. The army tactician stuff is the stuff that I would like to think that I had a clue of how to do. It's the how do I interact with your game.
Yeah, mechanically, what button do I push to do this? Like,
yeah. Silliness.
Yeah, it is a little silly. I an hour and a half, 2 hours in maybe, it is, if you like Company of Heroes, it's good. It's another... I haven't seen anything like super, super crazy innovative in it, like compared to the other games.
Kiefer reviewed it for us, and he was of that same sort of like, okay, it's Company of Heroes,
which is
awesome.
Which is a bad thing.
Hey, Company of Heroes is awesome. But also he was like, well, you know, for it having been as long as it has, it's weird because that is a situation where had the developer gone and done something different radically, people would have been like, what are you doing to Company of Heroes?
Well,
this is not the way this game works.
True. But I guess it's just like, you know, you wait this long for a sequel and you get it and you're like, wow, this is familiar. I mean, like I'm fighting in a different area. Instead of the beach of Normandy opening up, I'm in Stalingrad, but it's basically like march a bunch of dudes up a hill to, you know,
take over command points. This is disappointing. Like, this is more of the same, and I like it. It's much safer than they tried something new, and I don't like it, and now it gets a negative score.
Agreed. So this is not a negative or an anti-endorsement.
It's not a negative person. Well, look, here's the thing. I just started playing it. I like strategy. Summer is perfect for strategy. I'll probably be playing it for quite a while over the summer. I will revisit it as I have something new to tell you, the listener, about it.
Ain't shit coming out next month anyway, so.
Not at all.
So,
right?
I mean, anyone?
It actually sparked my interest. Did you see the news that SimCity issued update? Now calling it 5.0.
I did.
5.0. By the way, they also in their forums already are listing the feature sets and things coming for 6.0.
See, your tweet pretty much summarized exactly, like, do I want to go into this? Like, am I going to run at this brick wall again? And is it?
It's summer. I thought about it. You know? It's summer. I'm like, you know what? It's summertime. SimCity, kind of a cool, chill game. It's like that. However, I am almost more tempted to go back to Civ, though, because Civ has a new expansion pack out. That could be way more fun.
If you had to bet right now without having played, you know.
Hands down, Civ will be better, right? Yeah. And the thing about SimCity is that everyone wanted to build mega cities. And so now it's like, do I want to risk getting into, I don't know that I have enough friends playing to play or enough friends even who would be committed to play play a region. So do I go get in a public region or do I make a small region and do all the cities myself? But I don't really want to do all the little cities myself. I want to do a big city. Anyway.
Have you gone back and looked at any of your initially created?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either, but I bet you that would be entertaining.
They should do a Pacific. I haven't touched this thing expansion. In months,
you know, like
they should do it like Animal Crossing where you go back and there's like roaches crawling around all over the ground and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
like
I thought you meant just have Mr. Rossetti yell at you. Because every game really should have that. I really hope that someone integrates that into the core operating system of their next video game console.
Getting yelled at?
I guess Microsoft, I guess Xbox One is the closest thing to that, right? You didn't connect to the internet. Well, not anymore.
Well, Sony scolds you.
It's going to be Matrix voice that pops out of the Yeah. Just go play your 360, kid.
Oh, you had to go there, didn't you? You had to go there.
I'm sorry. I was trying to think of something he would say that would qualify as yelling.
Get out of here, kid. You bother me. Here's a 360.
See?
Don't have to attach that to the internet, do you? Yes. Hey, we're just being silly now. We lost the point. What else have you guys been up to?
Talk about Raise the Dead really quick.
Raise the Dead actually looked really good. That was one of the up on the stage star. Not easy for me to say.
The stage stars.
Up on the stage stars for the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, yeah. Ragtag Studios, really cool group of guys. We both met them at Indiecade a couple years ago or a year ago. I don't remember. A year ago. And saw it there. They sent me a pre-alpha demo for it, and I played through it. And it's a really cool, you know, there's some media out for it now, but it's like basically zombie Pikmin. And the idea is pretty neat. You know, the art's great. It's you're controlling Ray, who is the zombie with the light bulb in his head. And he's like recruiting an army and accomplishing objectives and taking on the townspeople and stuff.
And somewhere Matt Leone is very happy because it's many of the old Stubbs the Zombie developers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it has that same character and flair. It has that real feel to it,
the humor, the humor is there. And the writing is actually surprisingly good, even though it's text bubbles. You know, it's like charming and funny and a lot of good zombie sounds. Yeah, you know.
Like very good zombie sounds.
They got the
sounds.
Grunting just right or whatever it is, the grunting and moaning. What do zombies do?
Those things.
Brains, man, brains.
Some of them don't have a very good grasp on the English language, but your zombie did.
Brains, man. mine was more like the stoner zombies, like brains, man. Brains,
bra. Oh,
whatever.
The big waves are up there. Go ahead and get them.
Surfing zombies. There's a genre that we haven't done yet.
What?
Surfing zombies.
Zombie surfing.
Zombies. Okay.
That would be kind of cool.
Big waves.
It reminds me of Surf Nazis Must Die for some reason.
Or Surf Ninjas. Have you ever seen that movie? Surf Ninjas?
Is that for real?
It's a real movie. You never seen...
No.
Awkward.
Yes. So, yeah. So, Raise the Dead. It's entertaining. I think it's a long ways off, or still a ways off. But
not PS4 launch indie game?
Don't know. Don't know what when the completion is. But they're chugging along. And both times I saw it, and this last time I played it, I really liked it. So, very cool. I got a bunch of iOS stuff that I played.
Well, you can roll them out, or we can just tie up loose ends. I think everyone now is just sort of like, okay, can we just get on to The Last of Us?
Yeah.
You all are looking at me like,
let's tie up
loose ends.
We can just tie up loose ends then.
All right, so what kind of loose ends do we have to tie up? Anyone have anything else they wanted to bring up and talk about? I have a story that Andrew wrote that I thought was really funny. And this was from an interview with Patrick Soderlund over on CVG. And they were talking about, EA was talking about how long the cross generation would last, which is the, you know, how long will they be supporting this 360 and PS3 once the new generation starts? And he said that historically the first year out, most titles have been cross gen. And then the second years, there's less and less. But in year three, you'll probably see everything apart from maybe one or two games in the industry on that end. So I think it'll take about 18 to 24 months to get to the future. Now, the thing that's funny about this, as Andrew pointed out in the story when he wrote it, is that EA had prior to this said that they would be supporting the current generation for many, many years to come.
Which is more than three or four.
No, they've apparently defined it as two.
Oh, many, many.
I feel
yes.
like many is more than two because two is a couple.
See, now and a few is a three, right?
And that's two manys. That's two manys. Like, it's many, many is like way more than just many.
Granted, I think they still release Madden on like PS2, like to this day.
So maybe that was what he said.
They're covered then. Or what if they release like a Wii game?
Well, see, that or chuck them in a landfill, right?
I think it'll be really risky for publishers to already establish a mindset like that going into this next generation.
How soon do we see the Xbox 360 PS3 multiplayer servers shut down?
That's a good question.
It's a sad question because it's going to happen.
I think many, many, many years later.
So like three?
At the
18 to 24 three, yeah. months?
Each many means 1 year.
18 to 36.
No, yeah. I mean, I think 360 and PS3 are going to have tremendous legs. I mean, they're at year 7. I'm pretty sure they're going to easily get to year 10 and beyond, to be honest.
As enthusiastic and excited as we are about the new consoles, we're the core gamers, right? So we're the ones who are willing to go out and spend $400 or $500 on a new machine. But if you already... Huh?
Sounds like you said ballers.
Ballers?
$500.
Boy, I'm balling big time. I'm like,
I mean, are there any next-gen only games that really make you want to buy either a PS4 or an Xbox One?
Yeah.
Right now, yeah. For me, there aren't any
games. You know what would make me pre-order either system right now? Is if they announced that Grand Theft Auto 5 was coming to next-gen systems.
But that's the thing. For me, I want a PS4 because, yeah, I want to play Watch Dogs or Assassin's Creed 4 or whatever in with better graphics. But
right.
That's pretty much it. It's like, oh, all these cross-gen games. I want the prettier version, but in terms of exclusives, I don't think there's really that many
Sunset Overdrive, exclusives. But that's not this
but
year.
But that's not a launch game. Yeah.
Right. As far as launch games, I'm not really super excited about
it. I feel like the launch of the upcoming consoles is really just for the core of the hardcore.
What, and no Cameo 2? I mean, what the...
And right, just so then kidding. So then you pull that
Leave
out.
Viva Pinata? That was not the Rare game? Why?
You take that out of the equation, like, and you say the core gamers get in early, but then everybody else is looking and like still very satisfied with their 360 and PS3 through this holiday, which means it's really next holiday, it's holiday 2014, before you really can try and push again. There'll be a smattering of new titles then. But at the same time, now if your publisher's over the beginning part of 2014, you have to be really, you know, cautious about, well, there's still a lot of 360s and PS3s out there. This holiday, we probably still want to really support them. So now you're into 2015. So you could easily see this like stretching on.
And let's not forget that next year there's still games that are actually exclusive to 360 and PS3 coming out, you know? Like Dark Souls 2. That is right. A current-gen exclusive game. They have not
that's
announced
nuts.
A next-gen version
that's
of
that. That's nuts, because I feel like that's the kind of game that people would pre-order a system for.
But it doesn't really make sense to make it next-gen only, right?
Well, that
no, but it could be at least
and that
both.
Ship sailed because, you know, see what they did with the PC version of Dark Souls?
Well, it was they're actually, you know, apparently working on it, you know, internally when, you know, making sure that it's not shitty anymore.
Okay, well...
It's leading on PC, so theoretically making it cross-gen should be easier, but they might just not want to bother.
It was really just a lesson they shouldn't have had to learn, but they learned it, I think, I hope.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had no plans on making a PC version to begin with, and that developer never released a PC game before, so...
Well,
wasn't
enough.
It a petition? That like? Some...
Yeah. It,
they did
it,
actually respond to that, yes.
It's weird. The past year or so have just it's just been proving that internet petitions work. I don't like that. I don't want to live in a world where people can complain on the internet and they win.
It's all right.
It's
no
a
one's.
Theme. We're seeing
you know what
that.
You should do? You should move to state of Texas because clearly they don't listen to anybody down there.
Oh yeah.
They'll just change timestamps. So it's all right.
That's right.
I mean,
it's not a germane.
All I know is if internet petitions work, why is there no F-Zero? I want a new F-Zero. I think
truth.
Everyone that's listening to this, you know, we should all meet up on GAF and on the Shack, you know, chatty, and just make sure that Nintendo understands that we need a new F-Zero game.
Operation Rainfall 2.
Freedom Force would be a petition that I would start.
Ooh, yeah.
I missed that game.
Going back to the old irrational stuff. That was a good stuff.
Yeah, it was a great game. I mean, well, even the sequel was okay.
All right. So next week is a short week. We're going to record early. We're going to do a little 4th of July show. We haven't done one of these in a long time. So I thought what we would do is solicit your questions and do as long a QA show as you would like us to do. So throw us your questions in the official show thread for today's show, and we will throw them in front of myself and Jeff, who's back, and who's on next week, Dave? Dave's telling me. Andrew will be here. Andrew will be here, so me and Jeff and Andrew and...
mystery guest.
And somebody. All right.
Yes.
But we'll all be here.
Surprise guest.
I'm sure you have a lot of questions. It's been interesting. We haven't done one of those in a long time, so we'll do it. I don't know if it'll be 4 minute warning or not. There probably won't be a clock. I'll keep everybody moving along. We'll have fun with it as we get ready to give you a show for your 4th of July holiday if you're in the United States, or if you're overseas, just having fun doing whatever you do in the middle of the summer.
Getting drunk and lighting off fireworks wherever you are.
Yes. Speaking of fireworks, before we get out of here, we should do our finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, I will jump in and just say that I am happily re-indentured to Tom Nook and having a great time with Animal Crossing, which is an addiction for me. Although, honestly, with my current gaming habits... Well, with one of my current gaming habits, what I really need is about a 30-minute train ride each direction to and from work, because the games that I play every day religiously are Puzzles and Dragons and Animal Crossing. Hmm. I don't need a whole lot of them. I just need, like it would be great to just kind of, like, zone out for half an hour on the train. Like, I totally get it.
You picked the wrong state for that.
I picked the wrong country
for
that.
It's like your gaming methadone, right? Just get your little fix and...
Yeah, yeah.
On about your day.
Puzzles and Dragons super addictive also. But yeah, like there's something about Animal Crossing that has always gotten me, and I don't know what it is about running around and collecting junk and selling it to make money to buy junk to put in my virtual house and make my virtual house look like a junk store, but I love it.
That sounds like a life simulator.
Like there's something life. Completely addictive about it, and I can't tell you exactly what it is, but yeah, if you've been on the fence about Animal Crossing New Leaf and have ever been into Animal Crossing, yeah, it's got the hooks.
Sweet.
Jeff?
Real quick two-parter. I'll throw out a couple of iOS recommendations. Icebreaker, A Viking Voyage, which just came out. That is under the Rovio Stars label, I believe. It's their first release, and it's done by Nitrome. So if you're, if you played any Flash games online or whatever, you probably heard of Nitrome. They do really high quality retro graphic stuff. This is like a clever physics puzzler where you're, you know, slashing ice blocks and cutting ropes and stuff to get your Vikings into their boat. Pretty cool stuff. And the other one is Color Zen, which is a really, really cool, you know, sit down and play for 5 or 10 minutes puzzle game where you're dragging shapes around the screen to match different colors, and you're trying to, you know, basically end with the same color that the border of the screen is on. And anyway, it's really neat. It's really cheap.
Did you see that Innes has released an iOS game? They have.
No.
Yeah. It's called Eden to Green, and it's apparently a sort of tower defense of plants against robots.
Oh, that sounds
pretty dope, actually. I feel like the robots are going to win.
So,
okay, I got
it. And believe it or not, of all the people to publish it, it's a Zynga game. Zynga, wow. Like, totally changing their world. So that's, well, this is part of their publisher partner. So they went out and got Innes. And I will tell you that the drawback to the game is that it does use the hideous energy system, and the energy recoup is not especially fast. But it is under the Zynga banner, and it is a great, it looks like a little fun Innes game. And
cool. Just one more thing.
Eden to Green.
Awesome. I definitely got to check that out, because Innes is great. The only other, the other half of my finishing move is basically last week, or a little over a week ago, my favorite college professor from UCLA, Gary Gardner, passed away. And so just wanted to give a shout out to him. He taught students like Shane Black and Nancy Cartwright, who did Bart Simpson's voice, and Tim Robbins and stuff. So he's a big musical theater guy. But anyway, rest in peace, Gary.
Nicole, we'll pass the mic to you.
Sorry.
Man.
We can make Andrew follow that.
No, it's okay. I'll go real quick. I have a few projects that I'm not allowed to talk about just yet, so keep an eye on my Twitter for that. And I started making YouTube videos, because that's what all the cool kids do right now. So you can check me out on youtube.com/user/Nicole Zavalic. Good luck spelling my name.
Speaking of Last of Us, I liked your Last of Us video.
Oh, it was my first one, and I had never...
It was entertaining.
I'm learning. Okay,
I'll
say that. I'm learning how to do this. I just discovered iMovie. And then another thing is more of a question to you guys, is that I finally boot camped my Mac. Okay. And so I have a whole world of PC games that I need to catch up on. So
FTL.
Suggestions.
FTL. Okay, yeah, you absolutely should play FTL like right off the bat. That would be like, you got to play FTL.
FTL is available on Mac as well.
I have Mac for Steam Mac. I haven't played FTL before. So if there's any games that are only PC, like I'm working on getting SWTOR onto that. So any PC.
I wouldn't
only.
Have put SWTOR on that list of games.
Oh my God, I love that game so much.
I'd still recommend Cart Life if you haven't tried it.
Cart Life is also on Mac.
I haven't tried it.
Andrew's just shooting holes in us today.
PC only? Is that okay? We need.
Well, I mean, she got boot camp. It's like, oh, time to open up this world of games that I could have already played on my platform.
No, I mean, here's the thing is, like, you wanted us to tell you about, like, I guess, big Windows games. And the thing is, like, there haven't been
little Windows games.
You talked about Company of Heroes, too. That was
I would not throw her in a Company of Heroes. Like, you could, if you want to play a strategy, if you have the remotest interest in playing Army Toys, I could give you some recommendations for Army Toys.
Okay.
Do you like to play? Do you have any inclination to play that sort of game?
Why don't you just recommend getting Gamefly so that she could have the unlimited PC play included with her membership for only, I don't even know. I think
this guy right here.
Yeah, right? We don't do that on this show. God, what's wrong with you? Jesus Christ.
I'm sure one of the ads will explain what games you can get on that service.
What do you like? What are you looking for out of this mythical PC experience that you haven't had before?
RPG, puzzle. Probably not platformer, because I'd rather not have to get an external mic. I mean, or a mouse. Just something I can keyboard with.
Well, I think we should send her to Good Old Games.
Sure, yeah.
So, and gog it up?
Yeah, GOG.com. And maybe look through some of those things and see what's interesting to you. And then give us a couple of things to like work off of. And we'll give you some recommendations.
Okay.
How about that? Is that fair?
Homework.
But yeah, I mean, I think that because Good Old Games, you know, number one, great resource for games, and they work well. Mm-hmm. And I think they would work, since you did boot camp, like, you shouldn't have any problems with that, really, I don't think.
But definitely
and
FTL.
There's so many great classics. Yeah. But whether it's on Mac or not, FTL.
Yeah.
Righto.
FTL, FTW, yo.
Yeah. Andrew, would you like to do a finishing move?
Yeah, I'm trying. So I'm trying to think if this is on Mac or if it's Windows only. But Surgeon Simulator 2013. I'm realizing we haven't really talked about it on the show, have we?
No, we haven't.
I mean, all you really have to do is go to YouTube and watch any of the Let's Plays, and you'll understand exactly what makes this game so magical. It essentially gives you control of hands, so you have a virtual hand, and you can it. Makes it really difficult to do even the simplest of things. So, like, the main menu, you can, like, pick up a coffee mug, if you can. Like, you're just, I wish this weren't the radio program, because I could show you, like, me flailing my hands and just, like, let me grab this water bottle. And it's just, like...
It's like the Octodad of Surgeon Simulators.
It is Octodad. And, yeah, the hilarious thing is, the first level is, all right, you're a surgeon... Give this guy a heart transplant. And you're like, what? I don't even if I could control the game, I wouldn't know how to do a heart surgery. So it's like, okay, this guy's chest is open, and you're just like, all right, I guess I'll grab this hammer. And you just...
That sounds about right.
And so get the little machine that goes, bing.
You know, or let me get this saw. And it's just like, it's very cartoony, but just conceptually, it's horrifying.
It is sort of horrifying.
So, I mean, a better name for it's probably like Accidental Murder Simulator 2013.
Mm-hmm. Class action lawsuit 2013.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, definitely check that out. It is
that got greenlighted, right? Or greenlit or whatever.
It was a green light.
Yeah, I think.
All right, folks, if you are looking at your timestamps on your podcast and going, wait, there's still lots more to this, why are they ending? It's because, don't forget, if after the ending, after the song, after all of that, we're going to do the first of what might be multiple, because Kanata's not here.
Sure,
he's going to cry about it, and he's going to give me a bunch of grief. Like, well, how come you didn't wait for me? God, man, what's up with that? And I'm going to be like, well, where were you? Why didn't you come to the show? You know, when we record, I'll be like, well, cause, man, I got stuff. Anyway, it's a whole long thing that we'll get into about that. But we're going to do The Last of Us spoilers and discussion, because we're all itching to talk about it, and evidently a lot of you are too. So if you finished the game, stay around. If not, this would be the point wherein you would be clicking out after we say thank you to everybody. Thanks to Nicole and Jeff, and of course Jamie on the board, and Ozzy and Del Rio there in the staff booth for us. So that's it. And Andrew.
Okay.
Yes, and Andrew.
Well, I came in at the very end, so I don't deserve a
half
full
a
credit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just think.
Remember to head over to the official thread on shacknews.com to give us your questions for next week's show. Until then, though, that's your Weekend Confirmed, and we are Ghost. There was a time when I was riding the vine, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swagger with my sick ass flow. Now I rock the stages and I do it with ease. For blowing up from promoters off the scene. All right, everybody, you have been warned, so do not get upset with me if you're still listening that you found out that fucking Joel lied to Ellie.
Yeah, but...
And that was the good part of the ending after all the bad part.
We opened this discussion with just straight up what happens at the end.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if you're just stumbling into it, like, that doesn't mean any... Like, that doesn't actually mean anything to you if you haven't played the game. You're like, what? He lied? Okay, all right.
Yeah. All right, that makes sense.
So...
Yes.
Guys, where do we want to start with this? The Last of Us, for me, you know, I've been tweeting about it a bunch, and some people have only seen the negative stuff, so I want to start off by saying that I think that The Last of Us is an amazing game experience. Yeah. Absolutely amazing game experience. And I think that, if anything, it's another one of those games where its aspirations and achievements make its shortcomings to me that much more difficult to stomach and that much more painful to have in the game.
Just so, combat.
Yeah, for me, having done the review... I think it's actually, you know, now that it's been many weeks since I've played it, I do think it is actually my favorite game of the generation, but it's far from the most perfect game. I think it's one of the most... It is a very flawed game, and I understand where Garnett's coming from, but for me, in terms of what I wanted out of it, it was the game that I wanted it to be, and it really delivered on pretty much... everything I wanted it to
be.
Yeah?
I think narratively it's one of the shining examples from the narrative perspective of, you know, how magical it is when a really good story and a really well-told story meets some gameplay mechanics that sort of serve that for the most part, like, really well. Like, it was a very good marriage of the two, you know, the things that you're doing in that game, sneaking around and all that nonsense. It's really, you know, there's a weight to all the characters. There's a very lot of information conveyed with looks and little asides and things.
Sure.
Things that aren't.
For instance.
Yeah.
Well. Oh, her name just flew in my head. What was.
Tess.
Tess never says, I love you.
She never says please.
She never says please.
Well, and she.
But you completely understand the relationship between Joel and Tess. But you also understand, like, how brutal the last 20 years have been and what completely fucking damaged people they have become.
Well, I love the fact that she was the one in charge. Like you have this male protagonist, but, like, when he's in the scenes with her, she's the one talking to, she's the one doing the deal.
Yeah.
She's
the one passing
the
out
muscle.
The stuff. Like he's like, what do you want me to do? Like, I'll go over here. And you really get the sense, Nicole and I were talking about this before. There's a really good article,
Edge?
On Edge. Yes. That basically talks about, how gender roles are handled in The Last of Us. And while obviously the most glaring thing is that there are no female enemies that you fight, which would have created its own set of problems.
But would have been an interesting set of problems to cross.
True. But I think that narratively, the female characters in the stories, the ones that are developed from Ellie to Tessa to Marlene, they are all very, very strong. Like, a lot of cases,
oh,
they're
yeah.
the ones in charge. They're not, you know, it handles things like Tessa's death very, very maturely. Like you would I would have expected in most of these types of games, like, and it says this in the article, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, you know, when she's like, no, I'm going to sacrifice myself and blah, 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 you would see her go down in a hail of gunfire, which happens off screen.
So awesome you didn't have that. Like,
yep.
So well, that Tessa's sacrifice, you're right. It's such a place that could have fallen short, but instead it was a singing moment for this game. It was a spot
absolutely.
Where you were just, you so much powerful character interaction there.
And the only reference to that moment after that is, like, Ellie tries to bring it up with Joel at one point, and he's like, we're not talking about that.
And when you're
and that's it. That's
you know,
fucking
when you're
it.
In the upstairs
like,
part
is,
of that area and you're able to look down into the
yeah.
into the area where she's been, you know, which she's already lost because
right.
obviously the soldiers at that point are coming through. It's like you had just moments before been like, fuck, I really want to go back. I really
yeah.
want to, like, because you're already feeling a connection. You know the game's not going to let you because you know that's not what, you know, that's obviously not part of the plan for the game, but you're just completely overwhelmed by it all. It's like, that was really good stuff.
Yeah, very, very.
Although I was sad that we lost Tess so early in the game.
I am too, but I kind of, like as in Game of Thrones, like, I kind of am okay with characters in this game maybe living, maybe not, because it is sort of like, I didn't ever feel at any point that any character was completely safe, and that, you know, like, even the main characters, after you get to a certain point in the game, and you're like, oh, well, maybe this is going in a completely different direction. Like, I thought Joel died
and he was gone.
I thought it was really cute that they end on that cliffhanger and then give you control of Ellie, you know? So it does a really good job of using gameplay to sort of amplify the story beat, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I was like, it's really unlikely that he'll have died, but I don't know. And, like, it's so great.
Right.
I mean, and that's why that intro is so good too, right? Because, you know, you have this expectation where you're going to go in, you're it's after the apocalypse, and, you know, you're playing as Joel, and you know that you're going to meet up with Ellie.
Right.
But they by not showing any of the intro, it's like, oh, holy shit, this is before the infection. You know, I'm not even playing as Joel. You
right.
know? I'm playing as someone that I didn't expect at all. And
oh, Sarah.
Yeah, and that does a really great. Once again, I think that did a really great job of sort of amplifying the effect of the story.
And there was there was a sense of, like, where's my dad versus I can have this completely developed house to explore, which I really loved. And then not really from a narrative standpoint, but from a game design standpoint, I was super impressed that the opening had working mirrors. Like, video games
yeah.
never have mirrors that have reflections.
Well, I mean,
the furnishing of everything
that,
in the
that,
game
yeah,
was so
the
detailed.
Environments in that game are just so terrific. And just, like, when you're in the car, being able to look around
right.
and just be like, holy shit, they really modeled everything.
And, like, she rotates around the back seat and is, like, grabbing
yeah.
everything.
Oh, yeah.
Where you look so
and I'm like,
good.
Buckle your seatbelt.
You know, you're talking about that part about Ellie, and here's where I really get torn apart in my feeling about the game. Okay. Because I think that the segment, I think that Winter, where you're playing for a good bit of it as Ellie, is the most powerful part of the game. And it was really, I thought it was an amazing trick that they did. Well, not even trick. I think it was an amazing decision they had went with to say, you know what, okay, Joel getting injured, okay, that was cool, and then you didn't know what happened then, but then letting you play as Ellie and slowly, like, right off the bat with Ellie, you don't have everything. You don't have the full D-pad control of all the weapons.
You have, like, a bow and
you have just a bow, and, right, and you're trying to survive, and then you slowly, and it sort of brings you to grasp the idea of Ellie has become, you know, she's learned from Joel,
right,
and this
she's
has changed
an
her.
Equal.
And how the ramifications then of their like, there's no stronger emotional tie than could be built than by this struggle that she goes through to get Joel the penicillin
so that
he can be saved, and then vice versa, him coming to and realizing, you know, what he's got to go deal with. And yet at the same time, that part of the game is where it really becomes a combat action game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm being pulled two ways at the same time, because I love the emotional and character investment that I get there. But it's also at that point that I really have just started to become numb to the fact that it's like these people, like, we're back to this situation where we're in this game that everybody's going to pile up a body count.
But I mean, in that portion of the game, it needs to become an action game, because the entire, like, the what the narrative is about is about what these people will do in order to survive, right?
Right, right.
Can't they just talk it out? Can't they be like, look, we're two people, you're 20, I just killed half of you, we want to go through, shake hands, move on.
Well, you want to talk about that. There are a number of times where that illusion of being in a more narrative-driven game is broken, I kind of want to talk about something that, like, really, really, really irritated me about the ending of the game.
No, dude, because I think I know what it is, and I think there was something slightly off for me too, but I don't know if it's that I intellectualized it.
Well, so, I think the frustration that people might have with this game is that you want to have agency.
Yes.
As a video game, you project yourself into Joel's position.
That was the brilliant part.
But ultimately,
these are characters.
The game is not about that. It is very much not about that.
It's not about you at all. You're playing someone else's story.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's that schism that happens where
you're like, I don't know if I would do this.
For example, like I think
it wasn't even as much of I know I would do that. I don't buy that Joel would do some of those things.
No, well,
no matter how fucking bad he's supposed to be.
I would say, and this is where I sort of justify my disconnect with it. If I were a father, I think that I would feel differently about that, putting myself in that sort of journey that he goes, where he has a daughter he lost, he's totally shut off, and then he's basically runs into this character that gets into his heart, and he's like, what do I do? Do I go through this again? Do I, like...
It brings his heart back, obviously, from where he's been in a horrible spot.
But, like, he can't just, at the end, you can't just... I mean, you might as well just put a gun in his mouth and pull the trigger if that's, like, the, you know... That's not where his character was. Now, I, as a player, was like, it was easier for me to be more calculated about it. Well, like, well, dude, it is the fate of the fucking world.
That's,
like,
yeah, you know, I couldn't get past that.
Like, I get that you're attached. And then I was like, no, you know what? Like, I don't have any kids. Like, but I can sort of put myself in that role position and go, you know what? I might do something.
So
crazy.
Now we're talking about the hospital, and the hospital is what we're. So the hospital at the very end is where the game really, really unravels very badly
for me. Just combat
from the start, because he becomes fucking Joel Rambo. How does he suddenly become, like, now he is like a full on badass, like, paramilitary dude. And by the way, nothing crushed me more than when I walked over the assault rifle and it let me pick it up. And I'm like, oh,
now I get an assault rifle.
Really? I'm like, really? Come
on. You had a flamethrower. I mean,
you're right. At
that least
point,
that was homemade. It looked like someone made that flamethrower.
And so now I go Joel Rambo and take out all of these Fireflies who have been organized into a real paramilitary organization, have been fighting the remnants of the army, but they're able to be taken down by me, Joel Rambo, who, as far as I know...
Armed with a brick.
Yeah. It piles through the entire... By the way, piles through the entire hospital. And despite the fact that they've now learned that I'm coming to get... Like, first of all, they have me in this cell... you know, where I've been like brought back to life. And they've been talking about Marlene, about telling Marlene to go kill me, but then they don't have any guards on me. They don't have any real protection. They bring me back to consciousness right before the operation so that I could have something to have happen.
Then they tell me exactly where the surgery is happening and leave two dudes
to
with
your,
me.
To your yeah. point, though, the one moment I could justify all of that. Like if this character is like, fuck it, I'm going to save her at all costs. She's not going to die on me again, or I'm not going to lose another daughter or whatever. The part that killed that for me or did the most damage to that for me was when Joel walks into the surgery room.
Oh, that's the culmination of it.
Fucking kills all three of the doctors.
You don't have to kill all three of them.
I thought I did.
Well, no, because I walked in and the first one you run up to and you hit a button and you knock him out. And then the other two are just kind of cowering.
You don't knock him out.
Or whatever. You smash his head open or
so,
what's the...
So here's
mine
the thing.
Mine looks pretty dead.
You come into the surgery ward and there's a scene where the surgeon tells you, you're not going to take her or whatever. Well, how the fuck am I not going to take her? I've got a flamethrower, a shotgun, a deer rifle, an assault rifle,
right.
Molotov cocktails, bombs, and a fucking shiv and a fire axe. What are you going to tell me, bud?
And the blood of 30 dudes that were outside on my hands.
And I think I'm going to look at you and pull out this ridiculous... One of these ridiculous guns and point at you and go, really? I suggest you get the hell out of the way. But I can't do that. The only thing I can do is kill him. And matter of fact, I ran around in that room just to see if I was really
stuck. I did too.
You can run around the room. There's no way to advance until you do something. Now, a lot of people shot him.
Right.
I didn't shoot him. I walked up and I said, well, you know what? Fine. I'm just going to cold cock him. So I dropped and got rid of the axe. Okay, I'm just going to... If you go up and just press the attack button, you grab his hand with the scalpel, take the scalpel and turn around and shove it into his neck, violently murdering him.
Right. Well, I didn't
but
know.
That's the kind of person
that's Joel.
That Joel
that is.
That is
not the kind of person Joel
he
is. That's ridiculous.
You know the term the ludonarrative dissonance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They've established that because you know what? You just murdered 30 armed dudes.
Well, I guess they have established that, but
yeah,
and
he's made enough allusions to his past. Remember,
he said he was a hunter. He's played both sides.
Yeah, it's like, well, how many innocent people have you killed? Ellie does make that joke,
right? And he's like, well.
Regardless, why would you violently murder last brain surgeon in the world when there's no reason to?
Because he's selfish, and that's...
There's no reason to murder
them. I'm selfish. I'm not a murderer.
And so, once again...
He's unarmed.
I felt really frustrated because, if I were in that situation, I think I would have handled it differently. But the entire point of that entire segment is that... You're not supposed to like him. You're supposed to be so angry at him. By the end of the game, it's really interesting.
And it's about the price of, how far are you willing to go for
Well, it didn't work on me to make me angry. It just made me think, that's stupid.
Well, the thing is that obviously I wouldn't have made that same choice, but it's the entire game, for 15 hours I played to this point, he gets there, and then he changes his mind. Where is the thought process in getting her to this place that it didn't occur to him? That there could be how to harvest her for a cure.
Well, they telegraphed that at the beginning of Salt Lake City when she's not wanting to go, and she's like, "Oh, I guess I have to go, whatever."
But he knows that
after
she's
the
going,
giraffes. By the way, the giraffes were kind of awesome.
I loved the giraffes.
Yeah, that was one of my.
I really needed the giraffes after the moment. Yep. After dealing with the cannibals and all that, that was brilliant.
Those moments of quiet and beauty and that's probably one of the best ones, but those moments are really, really strong because I think it's the placement of them mostly. I got out of a zombie infestation and novel all of a sudden.
I mean, like I said, I think the interesting thing about that game is that when you explore, you're not rewarded with an achievement or,
right.
Or items even.
You're just rewarded with conversation,
right.
Most of the time it's just you and Ellie talking about something, and I find it really fascinating that in the trophy list there's no murder 15 dudes or
there's collecting comic books,
yeah,
and that's kind of the best.
There's that and there's a trophy for just getting all of the optional conversations or getting most of the optional conversations. That's one of them.
Cool.
Yeah. So I find that really interesting.
The lack of gamification in the game.
Well, it
not lack in a bad way. Just lack in a different.
They reward players by revealing more about the characters. And that's a reward in and of itself. You know, right. you become so invested in these two characters that
And I think I realized that halfway through the game, that's how this game is going to reward me. And so I feel like I personally am like a compulsive looter. Like, I can't even help myself. So I just thought that there would be items for me to find. And so rather than appreciating that I should have these conversations, I was just turning around and looking through every drawer and like every shelf. And I feel like I missed part of that because of my compulsion.
I mean, it's true. You might have missed a few conversations.
I think I did.
By just like, hey, Ellie, just wait here. And just running off to like some empty house and oh,
every
God,
single
opening
corner.
The fridge and just, where I need stuff.
Where's that duct tape in this place?
So having ranted about the surgery scene, then the flip side is that I think that they absolutely nailed the ending sequencing. I thought that like the whole then him carrying her out of the hospital was really powerful, and then
Do you think that was a happy ending or do you think that was a depressing ending? Because for me, it's been really interesting, like seeing what people are saying.
I think it was a poignant ending, but I don't think it was.
I think it was depressing.
I think it was a French ending. like French cinema. Well, it is not your typical. Like, you get to the end and it's almost like, wow, this was about more than I thought it was about. Like, when they wrap that all up and you're getting to the point, you know, it hits you on a level where you're like, wow, this isn't just like zombie apocalypse game. This is like, says something very kind of profound about human nature and human relationships.
We all
mean
psychologists now.
So what do you think The Last of Us is trying to say with its ending?
I think it says a bunch of different things, but the things that I got the most out of it were, had a lot to do with, you know, human nature and where we draw the lines for ourselves and what, you know, especially in the context of society and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And when you strip all those things away, what are the things that, you know, I mean, what keeps us human, right? Like, what can we still have organized society if they're like, if all of a sudden all the cops disappeared from the, you know, world today, what would happen?
I didn't get that. For me, I think it's very focused on just Joel. And for me, it's a story of a man that's just willing to do terrible things in order. I mean, his advice, right, to Ellie, you know, it's like, you know, you just have to do whatever it takes to survive, right?
Right.
Emotions overwhelm rational thought.
And it's really interesting because I guess a slightly different question to take here is do you think Ellie believed Joel when he talked about the fireflies?
No, I don't think she did.
Okay. I think the awesome part is that's a question that's very genuinely asked because the characters are so good and that the acting of the characters and the creation of them is so good that there's genuinely cause for you to think, I just don't know.
So, for me, I don't think she does, but she accepts it because that's what she needs in order to survive.
I don't think it's important whether or not she does. I think her reaction to accepting Joel, like basically,
I don't think she's accepting Joel. I think she's accepting the situation. I think she's accepting the fact that she survived regardless of her desire to survive.
Well,
and now
true.
She's given no choice but to survive with a person she no longer trusts.
It wasn't even clear to me if she knew that she was going to die. Like Ellie did. Like I don't even know that she actually knew that she was going to go under and they were going to.
Well, I mean that's why I think that scene afterwards is so important where she talks about all the people that she's lost.
Right.
I think and as you there is that like slump where she's like, I don't really want to do this anymore, but then she does make that comment, right? It can't be for nothing. I find it really, find it fascinating that the NeoGAF thread on the spoilers is titled that because I don't know if they made that thread before, like people had beaten it. Like to really understand the significance of that
that
phrase.
Can't be for nothing.
Like it was great because like it was like the ending for one of the trailers and it was like, oh man, that's such a cool tagline, you know? In context of the entire game, it actually has a lot of
resonance. And the greatest part about it is that if you take the adventure in context, it was all for nothing.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Yeah, it was like.
And that's why Joel is such a bad person because.
I agree with you that Joel is a bad person, I think
look at the way they animate him at the end. In the final scene, He's like jogging around. He's like, it's sunshiny, and you don't see that kind of step in his character until
he's an emotionally disturbed person by virtue of the events that happened, and I think he's the embodiment of this whole emotions overwhelm rational thought, and they've gone 20 years and everything's just off the hook, and those rational societal ways of thinking are just gone. And I think that you talked about like him being bad. The part that I did totally accept and thought was perfectly in character was how he handled Marlene. I thought his handling of Marlene at the end, I that was like, that's Joel.
Well, and that's a nod to Tess, right? At the very beginning, the first dude you encounter is like, she's like, oh, where's the encampment? All right, boom.
Right.
Bullet in the head, you know, and that's like.
And I get that he's that cold, calculating, like awful, terrible person when it comes down to things like that. But I more got a sense throughout the journey that he still had some compass, some degree of, I mean, if he didn't have any compass at all, how would Ellie be working on his emotions?
I mean, do you really think he has a compass after the torture scene, for example, when he in winter when he tortures the two people that he
Yes, because captured? I think that he's that fucked up guy. I think he's that fucked up guy who, in that case, had already decided that, because keep in mind, his compass also told him that cannibalism was an absolute no-no.
Right.
Because he was completely.
Are you sure about that?
Well, I mean, maybe pre-game, but like, I don't think he's eating human meat, like, you know,
on a regular basis. I don't think they're hunting humans for the sport. But I mean, let's not forget that, you know.
I mean, you don't know why he left the hunters. That could be why.
You don't know why he left the hunters. I mean, it could be why, right? But okay. I mean,
you guys are speculating now. Yeah.
But
going crazy.
But once again,
Joel, the early years.
Yeah.
Well, there is going to be DLC.
Here comes the prequel.
Yeah, there is that DLC, the season pass that they have.
Could
for the
it
last
possibly
of
even like remotely be post game?
I don't think that would be that interesting to do. To be honest, I feel like The Last of Us is one of those games where I hope I never see a sequel. I hope this was like,
I agree.
This is it. It was like, it's exactly what I wanted from it, and I never want to see it ever again.
Or if you must tell a story in that world, tell it with completely different characters in a completely
different
area. Or the
ish story.
Area,
I find
like,
the ish storyline very interesting. Like, he gets off this boat. You know, when you're with the two people and they take you into the sewers and you find all the dead bodies, that's the ish storyline, and you find all his notes from the boat and in the sewers. Mm-hmm. I think that would be an interesting story to tell.
Well, that could be DLC.
Yeah.
But
so as someone who has a brother, I also thought the reuniting with his brother segment was really good. And again, back to like this being a story about emotions overriding rational thought as a general theme to it, the whole interplay between the two brothers and the manner in which ultimately without a spoken word, his brother has decided that he's going to take Ellie and then is so surprised that Joel has changed his mind.
He's like, Ellie, get off your horse, you know? And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, we're going.
And the fact that we've gotten to a spot where in games we can communicate those sort of nonverbal emotional discussions that real people have is really awesome. And it's the same way as like having that question at the end, like does Ellie believe him?
Oh, even just don't know. What do you guys think about the stuff with Joel's watch and how how thematically that plays into it? Because his watch stops during the apocalypse, right?
And so does his heart.
And like he's like frozen in time sort of thing, like emotionally, like that's that heartbreak and whatever. And that's why he builds that huge wall around himself with, you know, emotional wall where he's just super gruff and pissed off at everyone. And then you see that over the course of the story, you slowly see that get eroded. I actually don't even remember. Does he have the watch on at the end?
I only remember in the beginning when Ellie says, your watch is broken.
Yeah, I don't think they really don't really refer to it. I mean, it's just a motif that they throw out.
Well, there was a scene early on when Tess is like, hey, come on, and whatever, and he kind of looks down at his watch for a second and goes.
I think that's interesting. You know? I think when I get back home, I want to take a look at the character model at the very end.
I just kind of pulled that out of my ass.
But I don't think he's going to get rid of his watch for just like a random reason.
No, but if he's like.
It's all
once
Sarah.
He rescues Ellie, and like you said, he's like, you know, things are back to good, you know, or whatever, and it's a little
completely completely oblivious of how he's completely destroyed and damaged Ellie's
society.
Yeah.
Screw society, but like, you know, like he so wants Ellie in his life that he is willing to sacrifice her wellness, you know, for it, you know?
Right. Well, and then at the end, he's willing to sacrifice the entire human race for her well-being.
There'll be others.
It's kind of interesting.
All right. So yes. I think all of us agree, though, that we really liked the game.
Yeah.
It wasn't fun, though. I didn't have fun.
In the traditional sense.
That's a whole other discussion.
I enjoyed the mechanics, which is why, like, you know, part of me does wish there was less combat, but man, the combat is just so good in that game.
It did feel good to throw a brick at someone, sneak up and stab him in the face. Like, I
thought the people combat was good. I really didn't enjoy the infected combat.
No, clicker AI was terrible, but the humans were
really fun.
Like, you play areas over and over again, and they're not on set patrol patterns. They're like, I'm like, holy shit, that dude's coming over here now. I'm like, whoa,
and
he wasn't here last time.
There's always more dudes than you think there is. And, you throw, like, a little scene with two dudes, and you kill the two, and then you're like, oh, I'm done, and there's like four more.
And, you know, I know you don't like the hospital sequence, but for me, it's like, oh man, I like, from a gameplay perspective, I was so glad to have, like, assault rifle gameplay in a gameplay system where you getting shot once would kill you, you know? Yeah, so yes, you know, he's going all Rambo, but, like, I loved the fact that, like, oh man, I had to use all of my smoke grenades and like, I had to use completely different tactics in order to clear that area,
yeah,
in order to fight, like, such a formidable force. So from a gameplay perspective, that was really satisfying to me, because you couldn't play it like Uncharted,
no.
You know? Like, if you played it as Uncharted, you just, like, blind fire your way and, like,
you wait
for dudes to come and, like, just, you know, like, melee attack them there.
Right.
So, like, being able to see, like, oh man, like, ultra hardcore Uncharted, like, oh man, that was so good, you know?
Right.
I do think it sort of cheapens the story,
this isn't really spoilery, but one final note on the gunplay is that I love the fact that when you get shot in that game, he's like, oh, and he, like, falls back, and you're
sometimes you get super staggered.
Sometimes you're down on your knee and stuff, and it's like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, yeah, ludonarrative dissonance and whatever, you're killing a million guys, but, like, when you're in the moment, you feel like you just got hit, and you're
that
like
sense of panic. You
holy
you
shit!
Like, shit! Yeah, I gotta get out of here.
If I get hit one more time, I'm like, or two more times, and I'm, you know, it's over. It's perfect, and that is really, really cool. I think that's mechanically, I also very much enjoyed it. I think it does take some adjustment, but it's
weird playing The Last of Us because I had to unlearn everything that I learned from Uncharted and relearn that game, and then, as you guys might have heard from my last podcast, I'm playing Uncharted 3, so, like, having to unlearn The Last of Us in order to relearn Uncharted.
You're, like, trying to sneak up on dudes. No, not so much.
At the end of this, I loved the characters and absolutely adored most of the story. I don't agree with the way the game made me end it, or the way the game saw the ending of it to go. I think that maybe Ellie being the, like, oh, she's got to die. I think there's way more interesting ways they could have resolved the end of it, but that's a different story.
They could have killed her, and I would have been okay with that too.
I think that would have been the easiest ending, though.
Yeah. And I did enjoy the combat part. I enjoyed the combat and exploring, exclusive of the infected. But I don't necessarily enjoy the two things in one whole.
Yeah, I mean, I started when I was playing it. I was like, why are they throwing infected at me so early?
You know, or the balance between all of them.
But then you realize that the human enemies are.
But at the end of the day, it is a game.
It is,
and it was a really, really good game. All right, folks, there you go. That's your spoiler cast. Hope you enjoyed it, Kanata. We'll come back to it again.
Also, he's gonna love best gay character in modern.
Dude,
video.
Oh yeah,
okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, no, just
really,
that out,
really cool.
Bill is awesome.
Yep.
Including the obligatory magazine comment, oh, dude. Pickup ride later.
It's well, and hilarious. that's you know, everything that this game does, it handles very maturely.
Oh, it hits everything just right.
It's not like making a show of stuff. It's
it
not
doesn't trying, make a show out of it, and it doesn't like soft pedal. It just like it's 100% confident in being a real adult story.
Yep, very good, very good.
All right, folks, talk to you next week. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.